the Shake and Wake Radio Network, where the truth is all that matters, and the truth will make you free.
They're not going to catch us. We're on a mission from God.
We're on a mission from God. Man, you got to understand, this is a lot bigger than any domestic problems you might be experiencing.
Ma'am, would it make you feel any better if you knew that what we're asking Matt here to do is a holy thing?
See, we're on a mission from God.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
You're listening to the Shake and Wake Radio Network, where the truth is all that matters. And the truth will make you free. ShakeAndWakeRadio.com.
Tune in every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, with John Durash of National Liberty Alliance. Learn how we the people are holding the system accountable with common law grand juries across the nation. John will be taking questions from the Shake and Wake Radio chat room. Or you can Skype or call in. Visit NationalLibertyAlliance.org for more information. Every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, John Durash of NationalLibertyAlliance.org on Shake and Wake Radio.
John, with John Durash of the National Liberty Alliance.
Okay, thank you, Rick. And that was a different voice there. Whose voice was that?
That was
you, Rick. That was Rick?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a different Rick.
A different, okay, the other Rick. I'm scratching my head here, so.
Right.
All right, good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Thursday night's Open Forum on the Law. Today is Thursday, September 4th, 2014, and we're going to jump right into it. So if everybody keeps their right, we've been doing well on leaving mics open, so people controlling their own mics and just kind of piping in and having a conversation. So if everyone could keep their mics muted when they're not talking, that'll work well. But anyway, we're open, so anybody wants to pick up that mic, open for a question or a comment or a direction to go. Nobody wants to pick up that mic? There you go.
John?
Who's that? Yes.
This is Justin Breithaupt from Washington State. I just got out of the trial today.
How you doing?
Pretty good. So today I went to a trial because they're trying to accuse me of domestic violence. I was trying to stop some people from selling drugs and doing a bunch of other fraud. And they arrested me and put me in jail. And so I went to the judge today, and I tried to tell him that there was no injured party and he had to let me go. And because the state was against me, not any injured party. And he told me that Washington State is a state of statutes and that common law has no place in Washington State and that I will have to work within the statutes.
You'll have to what?
He told me that I'll have to work within the statutes.
Yeah, well, he's a tyrant, and you need to sue him. That's enough to sue him. He just violated you, and this is a state or a town judge. What kind of judge is he?
He's a district county judge.
A county judge?
Yes, he's a district county judge, and I have a really, really good attorney to go to that my parents are paying for, and if I know what to tell them and if you think they'll actually be able to help me in that, I would love to do that, serve an indictment or whatever.
Well, it sounds like something. What'd they do? Put you in jail for a couple hours or a day or?
They put me in jail for 24 hours because whenever they have a domestic violence charge against anyone, they have to keep them for 24 hours. They took away all my Second Amendment rights, and they told me if I commit any kind of a crime, I'll be back in jail.
Okay, and what are the charges at this point? Are they misdemeanors?
Fourth degree domestic violence, and again, I was trying to stop some people from doing illegal drug trafficking.
Okay, and do you have any witnesses?
No, there were no witnesses there. However, there's evidence that the drug trafficking was taking place because I have text messages from the drug traffickers that, by their own admission, that they were selling and trading something, and they were paying for it, and they were using slang terms of drugs.
So they admitted that how, by text messaging or some other way?
Yes, they texted me instead of their dealer. They thought they were texting their dealer, and they started texting me.
Okay, and then they came to your home or something?
No, I went and confronted the person because I was in a domestic relationship with them, and so I just confronted them about it to try to resolve the situation without law enforcement and get them to stop doing it, basically.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, next time you need to go call the sheriff and let him handle it, no?
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll tell you, you sound young. How old are you?
I'm 29.
Oh, you're 29, okay. All right, well, look, I don't know how much you know about common law. You did mention you were going to get a lawyer. In your situation, you know, you might do well with a lawyer. It sounds like something that's going to be maybe a one-time or two-timer into court and you're out of there. And I don't like to tell people to get lawyers, but sometimes, you know, you don't have a choice because you don't know. I don't believe, it sounds like you probably don't know how yet to defend yourself, or have you been studying the common law? Have you been studying the common law yet?
Oh, my God.
You lost you there. You there? Hello? All right, until he gets his mic back, anybody else out there?
I'm here.
What do you got?
I ran for county council in Erie County in 2009, started serving in 2010, and I started reporting about all the money being stolen. And anyway, they looked into my background, found that I got an extra Social Security card in 1972. I was indicted for it. I went to prison for 9 months, and I ran for, so I was kicked off the county council, so I ran for committee person in the last election and won. And they just said, well, you can't have the job because of your federal, because
right.
You're convicted of fun.
Now, what were you convicted for?
Social Security fraud. I got an extra Social Security card in 1972. I was indicted 39 years later. The statute of limitations is 5 years, but I had been using that Social Security card for on and off for 39 years. After I got elected, I got indicted for it. Now, in their papers, it were asked for victim. They said none. You know.
I don't know. I had to think about that. You know, it was a fraud to use the Social Security number and you know, two of them. And also, even though that whole thing is a fraud anyway, I mean, but it's collective. But you are in there using their system. And, you know, not that they can hold that against you in a court of law, But remember, yeah, they're working together. They're not going to want you in there if you're going to reveal the fraud that they're involved with. But it sounds like, how long have you not been doing this now? I mean, you went to jail on this. How long ago did you go to jail? And how long? You said you did 9 months. How long ago was that?
I went to prison August 27th, 2012. I got out 9 months later, so I've been out for a year and 3 months or so. But I'm still on probation for another 11 months.
Yeah, well, if you're on probation, you can't hold an office anyway. And I'd have to think about holding an elected office but at some point you have to be brought back into society. Again, the crime in itself does sound like a crime, so I can't really comment too much on that. I mean, if you were arrested for smoking marijuana or something like that, or driving without a license, those are not crimes at all. You know, stealing is a crime, fraud is a crime. It sounds like you were guilty of fraud. Would you agree with that or disagree?
Yes, I agree.
Okay. All right. So you were guilty of fraud, and so they have a right to do everything they've done at that point. Now, under common law, once you're off of probation, the people need to be brought back into the community and to become people again. And, of course, in their system, they're never going to let you do that. You're a felon forever, and that's what they're going to hold to. Once we get the common law back in place, that won't be so.
Okay, well, but by their admission, it said there is no victim.
Well, no, fraud with fraud, there is a victim. The people are a victim, even though, well, you see, here's the touchy thing. Here's the kind of the freaky thing here, is the fact that you did it with Social Security numbers. Okay, the Social Security cards, and so two different numbers that you used to commit the fraud. Now, you were playing in their system. The whole Social Security system is a fraud, you know, so, but nevertheless, it is a system that the people accept, and I'm not sure exactly what you've done or how you used it, but nevertheless, you were guilty of a fraud. There are crimes that don't necessarily have to have a victim. Look at you. If you put the people at large in danger, okay, you can't be walking down the street shooting a gun off in the air. You know, for instance, you can't drive drunk. Okay, you're putting people, you know, society in danger, and the government does have the authority and the duty to protect the people from someone that's out of control. So in this case, you know, you've committed a fraud, and therefore it's against the people. So those kind of crimes do exist. Society can be the victim of a crime. So you can't go off
well,
on that.
Look, did he enrich himself? Look, if we had good grand juries that could actually look at the intent and everything else.
I don't know the nature of the deal.
You know, if you use two numbers just because you were trying to, you know, you were trying to get out of the income or have less taken out or something like that, you know.
Well, he admitted that it was a fraud, though. Yeah, that's why
it was a fraud because he used two numbers. But why did he use
two
numbers?
No, he said that he was guilty of a fraud. I said I don't know whether he was really guilty of a fraud. He said, "Did you say that you were guilty of fraud?"
Well, what I was up to, back in those days, I was moving mobile homes, and back in those days, nearly every truck driver had two driver's licenses. I got, then they started using the Social Security numbers, so I got an extra Social Security card so I could have an extra driver's license. If one got suspended, I could keep working.
Okay, so that's fraud, because now the driver's license on the commercial usage, which is what you were using it for, okay, that's a commercial use, and that's legal. It's legal for them to require a driver's license for commercial use and certain surtax for that purpose. That's how the government makes money, and to control the commercial part of the, you know, commercial movement across the nation. So all of that was legal for them to do. They used the Social Security number as an ID in order to get two driver's licenses. That's a crime. That is fraud. Okay,
To get out of an illegal income tax. It's kind of an, but anyway. I understand.
Right. Well, he's trying to do it for doing other things. Yes, I know that. And but nevertheless, you know, we can't become them. You know what I mean?
No,
we can't condone that. So you have a situation where you have to finish off you're going to finish off your time period. You know, as far as being on probation. Do you think that the penalty they gave you was reasonable, or you think it was too harsh?
No. When I started out, I had a public defender. He said, you will never go to jail. And then another lawyer got a hold of me. He said, let's change your plea from guilty to not guilty. And because of that, the judge got pissed off and sentenced me to jail for one year and one day. I got out after 9 months because of good behavior.
Well, you know how you could tell when a lawyer's lying, right?
When he's moving his lips.
There you go. Thank you. yeah. So I mean, but do you feel that it was too harsh?
Yes, I shouldn't have went to jail at all.
What do you think should have happened?
Just probation. And
right.
That's all they were really after. They just wanted me off of county council because I was squawking about all the money they were stealing. You know, I had everything in black and white, and I was handing it out.
Right, but that's later on. Now, we're talking about when you went to jail, that was many years ago. It was back in early 2000s, I think you said?
I went to jail 2000. I was indicted in March of 2011, went to jail August 27, 2012, got out 9 months later.
Oh, okay. So when did you run for office?
2009.
Okay, so you ran for office. You ran for office before you got in trouble.
Yeah, they went back in his past and they found
what got indicted. I mean, it took 39 years.
It took 39 years for what?
They went looking for dirt, John, and they found it to get him off the council. That's how he got caught.
Okay, that's a crime too. That's a crime too. Look at you know, in a sense you're a victim, in another sense you were guilty of something, and look at they're guilty of something too. You can go looking for dirt on them and you'll find it, but you won't be able to use it because they're playing ball, and so that's the reality of the world we're in at the moment, and of course we're trying to change that world. The only thing I can say to you is that once we back to common law. Then when you're off probation, you would no longer be required. It can never not be used against you anymore. You know, that's the only thing I could tell you. Now, you know, it sounds like it's so close. By the time we get in and get things done and get to that kind of looking at cases like that, you'll be off probation, I'm sure, by that point. And you know, then I don't know if it's worth trying to do anything about it. You know, we're all going to take a loss on the harm that's been done to all of us because there's no way that we can get everyone in America can get restitution because almost every person has been harmed, whether they realize it or not. Every person has been harmed. They've robbed us of our rights, our unalienable rights. People don't realize. A lot of people, you know, they really don't realize how controlled they are by their government. And when they wake up to it. They usually wake up to it by something that all of a sudden happens that they're saying, wait a second, that's a freedom I've been enjoying for a while. Why are they bothering me? You know? And that's when they wake up to it. But when you really look back and see how suppressed we really have been, it's amazing that we've gone on this long living with it. But, you know, it's like that old saying, you know, you put a frog or something in hot water, in water, and you heat it up slowly, and they'll boil to death. I don't know if that's true or anything or not, but nevertheless, it's kind of the same kind of an idea there. But anyway, yeah, there's nothing you could do at this point anyway, at least not in their system, and it's the system that they got. But when common law comes back, at least you'll be able to do things that you couldn't do before. You know,
he can always testify anonymously in front of the grand jury to get the people that were stealing the money. They probably did more harm than he did over the years. All the money that he found stolen out of his
right.
Council there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, all of that's going to go away too, providing we get in and do the job. You know, I mean, it's going to be dependent upon the will of the people to do the job that they need to do. And we're going to find that out soon because we're preparing to do that now.
John?
Yes.
Hi. Okay. I'm sorry. Was that gentleman finished?
I'm done.
Okay. Thanks. Tammy Hollins here. I'm in New York.
How you doing, Tammy?
Good. Got a question. I've been waiting for this call tonight. So I know the last time I spoke with you on Monday, remember I said I was going to go to court for the ticket?
Yep.
So I went down to the court, and so while I was there, I was looking through the common law handbook. So I saw on page 11, which I had developed to give the judge one of the handbooks, and so I asked him if he would turn to page 11. And so I talked to him about consent and jurisdiction and that the information that I'm now familiar with on common law before I handed my ticket in and had no knowledge of, I now want to withdraw my consent for his jurisdiction or under his jurisdiction in this court, which is not a common law court. So I asked him if he would turn down to or would go down to the third paragraph. And so I asked him, would he read that? Yeah. And as he read it, and then I told him, and look at particularly the judges, have no authority to make a ruling and so forth. And then I also asked him to go down to the fifth paragraph, which is our U.S. Constitution only authorizes common law courts, also known as courts of record and so on. And he was so shocked, the whole court was. And so I told him, so at this point, I am withdrawing my consent. And because this isn't a common law court, then I will not answer to the fine. I will not be paying the fine. So he went on and say, he went on to tell me, he said, no, this isn't a common court. I said, is this a court of record? I said, because the common court is a court of record. He said, oh, yeah. I said, but is it a court of record per the U.S. Constitution? Because from what I'm studying and what I've learned, it is not. It's an equity court. So he wouldn't answer me. So he said, well, listen, do you need extra time? Is that what you're saying? You need extra time to pay the fine? He says, I could give you 30 days. I can even give you 60 days. And I told him, no, Your Honor, I don't need any time to pay the fine. I've already stated I'm not giving you consent. I am withdrawing my consent to stand under your jurisdiction. And so at this point, I want this case dismissed. And he says, but no, I'm going to give you time. So I told him, well, look over the book. You know, I said, you have it. And I said, and I'm going to wait for you to render a decision. And he says, oh, I don't have to look over the book. I already know the law. He said, give the book back to the bell. And I said, no, that's a gift. I'm leaving that with you. That's a gift. No, I don't want no gift. He said, I'm going to give you 60 days. He said, if that's the case, he said, then you put together a motion. He said, you get a motion together. He said, I'm not going to suspend your license. I'm not going to do anything, okay? You just get a motion and you give it to me and I'll render a decision. My question is this. If I already said to him that I'm withdrawing my consent and I no longer will be under his jurisdiction or am not under his jurisdiction, if I do a motion, isn't that me now giving him back the authority that I just told him that I'm taking back now that I'm knowledgeable and are familiar with the common law handbook? Was that a catch-22, or is it me?
You got it. You're on the mark here. Yeah, you're giving him jurisdiction if you give a motion. But what you can do, did you file any papers with them prior to going to court or no?
All I did was handed the ticket in, and, you know, I pleaded not guilty so I could get to the court because, remember, I wasn't familiar with any of this National Liberty Alliance or anything. So,
you did very good, let me tell you.
Right, so in the event, from the time that I handed the ticket, saw him, he gave me the date. Remember, Sheila brought me in. I've been looking through these things. I've been listening to, you know, all the calls, the Monday night, the Wednesday. We were able to listen to Tuesday, but then I know that's strictly administrators, and we don't get that call anymore. I mean, New York State coordinators, I mean. So I've just been listening to Monday. I've been listening to Wednesday. I've been listening to Thursday and, you know, just asking wherever I can and just reading what I can and trying to organize in my head, you know, pieces here and pieces there, trying to put things together. So by the time I had to go back to court, which was the second, this is what I underlined, and I knew what piece I wanted for one, what piece I wanted for two, if he went on, and that's what I did. So at the end, he just said, you know what, I'm just going to give you more time. That's it. That's it, Tammy. I'm going to give you not 30 days, I'm going to give you 60 days, and don't worry, I'm not going to suspend your license or anything, and if that's the case, fine. Just put together a motion or put me a motion. And so I told him, okay, can I get that in writing? I said, and I'll go from there. He said, oh, if you want it, he said, get it from the stenographer. She can give you all that. But he refused to take the book, which was fine. He gave that back. But at least I had him to read what I was discussing so that he was on the same page with me, and that's what I wanted him to do. And so now he says file a motion. But now my question is, can I just do an affidavit at this point? Because if I do anything and give to him, then I give him back the consent. He just tricked me again.
Right. Yeah, I'm on the site looking. I thought I had something up here, and I'm not finding it. I have something for traffic.
Could I call you, like, and when I say call you, because I know you give us, because listen, remember, he told me I got 60 days.
Yeah, you got time. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get up onto the site, hopefully before next Thursday.
That's fine.
I'll get up onto the site a paper, and the paper is a paper that when you ever get a ticket, you file it and you send it in. You can send that in now, and basically you're denying them jurisdiction in that paper.
Exactly.
It's not going to be a motion. It's going to ultimately be a demand, an ultimatum that you're going to give him.
Gee.
He can accept it as a motion, but it's not going to be a motion.
Why?
And have to go back to his court. She doesn't have to go. Oh, she could do it
on
paper.
No, she could do it on paper and send it in, and wait for him to see what he does. Now, if he sends you a penalty anyway and say, okay, you know, I made my decision, you're guilty and you got to pay this, there's only one option you have at that point. In order to protect your license,
you told me. I didn't forget that, what you told me. You said, Tammy, pay the fine and you sue them later. I didn't forget that.
That's right.
I just wanted to test the waters and just see how this works out. And it really shocked them. It shocked them.
John,
that's good, yes. They do. Some of these guys that haven't heard it yet, they do get shocked.
Or she could take off with that. She could give him a writ of error for moving ahead without establishing jurisdiction.
I wouldn't go with a writ of error in his court, at least not right now. What I would do is send him a paper which lets them know that this is not a, you know, that you're not giving them any consent. Basically, this is you're coming in and really just kind of testing the waters is what you're doing, and you're telling him that he doesn't have any authority over you, and you're going to do pretty much what you've done, but it's going to be done on paper, and it's going to go a little deeper than that, and it's going to let him know that if he continues to pursue this thing, that his court is susceptible to collateral damage from your court. And that all of that stuff will be in the paperwork. It'll just be laid out, and all you have to do is just make it work for your case. You know, change the names of the places and so on and so forth in the paper. It's very simple.
Okay, I love it. So we'll talk more, but I just wanted to share with you what happened right after we spoke, just kind of testing some of these things, and not, you know, to be, you know, derogatory, because like I told him, Your Honor, I'm not being disrespectful or derogatory, but I have to withdraw. And so I was really, you know, did it in love, because, you know, we have to do things in love. With love and kindness,
I agree. Amen.
And so I did it in love, so he couldn't get, you know, angry, but he did say what he, you know, what he needed to say, but I also said what
I like the way you did it with the book. That was a fantastic idea. That's you know, because here it is in writing. It's a book, and it's a handbook for jurors, and it's got the IP, what do they call that number? IPN? No.
No, it has
ISBN.
ISBN, yes, the ISBN
right.
number on it, so it gives a little official look to it, and here it is, and we're quoting their scripture, so to speak. You know, we're quoting their law, the common law, or we're quoting the Supreme Court rulings. But let me suggest something, and I just thought of this when I was listening to you talk, and instead of using the word common law, especially doing it the way you did with the booklet, use the law of the land, which is common law. And the law of the land, and you can always refer to Article 6 of the Constitution, Paragraph 2, which requires all the judges to obey the law of the land. As a matter of fact, I'd read that out to them and connect that into it also. And okay. I believe we do it in that paper. But I'll get that paper up, and it'll probably just call traffic. And I could have sworn I had it up there. I don't know where that – didn't I have a traffic one up here, Gerard? Could have sworn I had.
Yeah, it's under the courses and court cases examples.
Right, court cases examples, but I don't
and
see
it's
traffic.
It's down in the second. It says below, find few example of some cases documented, and it's the last one in the second set of.
Yeah, that says traffic. File so on maybe
demand,
that's it. Yes, that's
says,
it.
Hold on, let me just, because I was looking for it previously and I couldn't find it, so when I went to court, I just took the book and I was just going through it, praying, and I would find something. Okay, what am I looking at?
Okay, here it is. Yeah, that's it. Let me just real quickly look at it.
Essays and lectures. Let me walk you through it. Essays and lectures.
Yes.
On the blue tab, and then you get the drop down, and you move to the right. It says court access course, right?
Wait. Court Access Course.
Course.
Okay.
Course. C-O-U-R-S-E.
Right. Gotcha.
That drops down another drop down box, and it says Court Cases Examples. You click on that.
Court Cases Exam EX. Uh huh.
And then once you get to that page, it's the second set of things. It starts with file on demand and ends with traffic.
I think if you
just put in court cases examples into the search bar, it'll bring you to this page anyway.
Okay.
If you search it on the search bar.
Okay. And what's the name of the form itself? I'm sorry.
Well, it says traffic, and you open it up, and it's
okay. That's what I want to know.
Court
that's
cases
what I want
and
know.
Examples, right? And then,
okay.
And
no,
then
I have everything
traffic.
Else. Right. I just want traffic. Okay, that's what I. So, John, if I need you, like, I'll wait till next week Thursday. You guys. Okay,
yeah, let's take a minute and look at this document, because this is probably a good document for everyone here tonight, and it's a generic kind of document. It was written for traffic. I might add something to this. I might put another one up here, because I think I've done another one since then, but let's look at this. And basically,
okay.
you're on the top, it says jurisdiction barred, this is a verified action, so this becomes an affidavit at the same time. But you might want to add your affidavit to what took place in that courtroom, everything that you remember, write an affidavit and give a sworn statement to it and add it to this.
Okay, let me ask you a question, because I was looking for the affidavits on the National Liberty Alliance web, but I didn't see that either.
Yeah, I think the affidavit, let's see if there's an affidavit. You'll probably find affidavits if you download the court course, you know, the court access course.
Okay,
you'll find it there. I'm not sure. I'm looking now to see if it's out on this page also. There may be an affidavit form. No, there's not. I don't see an affidavit form.
And so what I did was I went over to my local business to try to get the form that I really wanted, and he gave me a website because he didn't carry it, and he said, I think this is the one you want, Tammy, and he didn't carry it. So I haven't had the opportunity to go online and look. But it says something like it's a general affidavit. That's what it says. It's not
right, yeah, that's good, too. You know, it's just got the basic beginning and then the end, and you put the information in between. That kind of a layout works good. We do have one that's got some – you know, a clause or two in there that's common law-ish. But both will work.
Okay, I couldn't find it, so I didn't know, like, you know, if I got to hurry up and file this, but I was trying to just pray. Okay, God, just help me. Please just give me the knowledge and the courage and the boldness. Because, you know, John, sometimes, you know, we have to ask God to give us the boldness so we can speak as we ought to. You know what I'm saying? It's so just, like, stand up and really speak, because sometimes it's kind of fearful when we feel fearful. But I just told him, just give me the boldness to speak and tell me how to say it and how to do it, because I'm here by myself, you know, but I'm not really by myself because you're with me. And God, he did everything. I didn't do anything in that court. He did everything in that court. It went just as smooth as it could have gone. And they felt, you know, they, you know, sent me off with the farewells, and I thanked the court very much. And I went on.
Oh, that's good. Very good. All right, let's go through this document real quick. It starts up on the top, your town, your city, your village, county court, whatever it is. And because it's a corporation, we have, and I, you know, I put this in my cases now, a fictitious foreign corporation, corporate entity, legis, which is being used to conceal fraud. Now, the meaning of that is it's a Latin, and it says a creature of law, an artificial being, as contrasted with a natural person. So they have an artificial being, really, ultimately, that's coming out after you under a name of a town, court, city, village, or whatever it is. So anyway, that's how you start up on the top. You put your ticket number up on the top right side. You can see that highlighted there, the place for the magistrate's name, your name, and you turn yourself into the plaintiff. Okay, and you're going up against the police officer. You put a shield number up there, and you call him the complainer. Okay, so he's the complainer. You're the plaintiff, and the town and the village is the court, or the town, city, or village is the court, or the county court, whatever it is, and that's a fictitious corporation entity, being used to conceal the fraud. Now, on the far right, it's a verified action, so this is going to become an affidavit at the end. You're going to the title is jurisdiction is barred, and it goes court lacks personal jurisdiction or personam jurisdiction, and it goes I want your name, one of the people of your state, here and after the plaintiff accepts the oaths and the bonds of all the officers of this court, and by the opening of plaintiff's court of record moves this nisi prius court to quash for lack of authority or personal jurisdiction, considering that this court's jurisdiction is barred because this is a nisi prius court, not a court of record, which will proceed unless a party objects. Plaintiff objects to the proceedings and proceeds obsta principis. Thereby, this court is barred jurisdiction. Now, obsta principis is a Latin phrase, and it means withstanding the beginning, to resist the first approaches or encroachments. And that's a Supreme Court ruling that gives that principle. And then there's a Supreme Court ruling here we got. It may be it is a obnoxious thing in its mildest form, but illegitimate and unconstitutional practices gets their first footing in that way, namely by silent approaches and slight deviations from legal modes of procedure. This can only be obviated by adhering to the rule that constitutional provisions for the security of person and property should be liberally construed. A close and literal construction deprives them of half their efficacy. That's it. Half their efficacy, and leads to gradual depreciation of rights, as it is consisted more in sound than in substance. It is the duty of the courts to be watchful for constitutional rights of the citizens and against any stealthy encroachments therein. Their motto should be obsta principis. And that's in Boyd versus the United States, and that's why we use that that particular phrase. But it goes on. This court is not to construe this paper as an appearance or a plea, but in fact a denial of jurisdiction, denial of consent, and a demand to restore counter... now, here I got counter plaintiff, and that's a mistake. It should be restore plaintiff. So I'll have to make that correct. It should be plaintiff. And by the way, we have footnotes on a lot of this stuff. I'm just not reading all the footnotes.
Right.
But so on line 31, change the word counter... Get rid of the word counter to restore plaintiff to his former state, or you can put plaintiff here and after victim or something of that nature if you want to.
Restore plaintiff.
Huh?
I'm gonna try to put restore plaintiff.
Plaintiff to his or her former state by releasing plaintiff from this unlawful constructive custody immediately. Plaintiff speaks from his or her court of record. And then you attach the memorandum of law and jurisdiction, which is also on the same page. Memorandum of law and jurisdiction. It says here, see memorandum of law and jurisdiction incorporated by reference as though fully stated herein attached. And so make sure you attach it. And again, in there, you know, change a few things to make sure it's yours and not, you know, because we tried to write it generically, but you got to put your personal stuff in here. Plaintiff is responding to this court through his or her court and by special appearance under the threat to suspend plaintiff's commercial license to drive motor vehicle due to an unlawful summons given to the plaintiff by a police officer here and after the complainer, acting under the color of law while traveling in a non-commercial automobile, which is an unalienable right that cannot be licensed. And, of course, we have a lot of footnotes in here in this, but we do have no state may convert a secured liberty into a privilege. That's Murdoch versus Pennsylvania, U.S., you know, U.S. Court case. And an appearance ticket is another court case. Appearance ticket is not an accusatory instrument, and its filing does not confer jurisdiction over a defendant. That's People versus Gabe. Now, goes on, plaintiff was not engaged in a commercial trade at the time of the alleged infraction and only produced said license upon the unconstitutional detention and demand of the complainer. Therefore, the complainer has mistakenly filed a false claim. And we have motor vehicle. Now, this is a court, the U.S. Title 18. Motor vehicle means every description of carriage or other contra. Let me think about this word.
Take your time.
Contrivance. I think it's pronounced contrivance. Propelled or drawn by mechanical power and used for commercial purposes on the highway in the transportation of passengers and property, or property or cargo. And that's Title 18, Section 31. So you wouldn't do in those things. Then you go on. Plaintiff has learned by experience not to resist demands from a corporate police officer because they are unlearned in the law of the land and have been unlawfully instructed by superiors that statutes apply to people's corrections to such an officer only seems to escalate. Let me go back and reread that. Okay. Law of the land and have been unlawfully instructed by superiors that statutes apply to people. Corrections to such an officer only seems to escalate their harassment upon the people while being unlawfully detained. It is for this reason plaintiff possesses a driver's license under duress to prevent harassment and police brutality while traveling. If this municipal court proceeds unlawfully, this court, complainer, and all the officers of this court are subject to collateral attack by the plaintiff's court of record. This court proceeds according to summary proceedings and statutes which are both barred by the law of the land thereof. Therefore, the plaintiff will not make a personal appearance the day of the trial and thereby has denied consent to the jurisdiction of the statutory court. Therefore, no sanction can be imposed, and this court ordered to dismiss the case and notify the defendant of the same immediately. Now, again, that's a mistake here. The word defendant should be changed back to plaintiff, okay? And that is line 61. So 61 change notify the defendant of the same immediately.
61 is notify defendant or plaintiff?
Defendant. Right, change plaintiff, change defendant to plaintiff, notify the plaintiff.
Okay.
That's line 61. Let me make a note here because I got to change this. Line 61, defendant to plaintiff.
You think you'll have this sheet, you think you'll have this done by next week? So I won't print it till next week or something?
I'll fix it before next week. I think I have an updated one, and I might even change it and put another one that's updated. But anyway, it goes on of the same immediately. Ignorance of the law by the officers of this Nisi Prius court will have consequences. Plaintiff has unalienable rights protected under the Bill of Rights, which the officers of this court took an oath to protect. Since this court operates under corporate charter, the officers of this court would be acting outside their jurisdiction without the consent of the plaintiff, and thereby under the color of law and in violation of plaintiff's unalienable rights. Now, again, I got counterplaintiff here. It should be plaintiff's. See, the old way I was thinking on this was doing a counterplaintiff as Thornton was teaching, but we corrected that. I think we know he's made an error there because we're not in their court. We're opening our own court, so we're the plaintiff, period, not counterplaintiff. Okay, common law is preserved under the Supremacy Clause, and this is what I was talking about. This is Article 6, Paragraph 2. the Supremacy Clause that reads, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all the treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the constitutions or the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding." So they cannot stand against it. And it goes on, we have another one. This is a court case, Ex Parte Watkins 3 Peter, where we read, "The judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Inferior courts are those whose jurisdiction is limited and special and whose proceedings are not according to the course of common law. Criminal courts proceed according to the statutory law. Jurisdictions and procedure is defined by statutes. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court." And then there's another court case, Kansas versus Dunmire. Due course of law, this phrase is synonymous with due process of law or law of the land, which means law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice, which of course is a court of record. Wherefore, plaintiff moves the court to quash for lack of personam jurisdiction, or personal jurisdiction, either one. I have personal. I'm going to change that to personam. I like personam better. And then that's it. Then your name goes there and a notary signs it. Now, I'm going to update this between now and then. I'm going to make the note to update traffic because this is probably the most popular. And this you can use with any issue. Notice you don't get into discussing what you were stopped for because you're not going to discuss the case because there's nothing to do with it. We're talking about jurisdiction.
Right. Consent.
We always talk about jurisdiction. They don't have it.
That's right. That's actually the main ingredient, the priority.
That's right. When you get that, and you're always on that. You see, that's what you always got to keep in the mind when you're in a court. You're always on the point that they don't have jurisdiction. Don't
but
ever
John,
get into their argument. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be subject matter jurisdiction?
Well, they have no subject matter jurisdiction either. That's what I think I added in the other one. They don't have personam jurisdiction, which is first and foremost. Even with their affidavit, they still don't have subject matter. They don't have personam jurisdiction because they have to have jurisdiction over your person, okay? And they have to have both personam and subject matter. So we do make the point that they don't have a subject matter jurisdiction either because there's no sworn affidavit and there's no injured party. By an injured party, by the way.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, in that are you done with that?
So, yeah.
In that criminal case that I had, where they picked me up and charged me with failure to obey a lawful command.
Yeah, your argument is the same.
Yeah, it was the same basically, and
it's
judge.
It's always the same. Every court, it's always the same.
And I filed my memorandums. And the counter complaint or the counterclaim, you know, weeks before the trial, but the judge took time to read it in court, and he said, "Well, it seems to me that you're arguing that there's no jurisdiction, and the common law has been legislated away." And I said, "No, it hasn't. I mean, the state constitution says that the inhabitants of Maryland are entitled to common law."
There you go. Most state constitutions say something like that. New York says that all courts shall be courts of record. And the key thing is going back to Article 6, because when they say that, you know, these things don't count anymore, common law is irrelevant anymore, then Your Honor, are you telling me that the United States Constitution for the United States of America is irrelevant? That your oath, you didn't need to take your oath, and why did you take your oath? Because didn't you take an oath to sworn to protect and uphold that Constitution? Is that not the law of the land? You see, they can play their game that any case after 1888 or some BS year or something, 81 or whatever it is, that anything before that is irrelevant and anything after that, but there's a lot of good stuff that's after that anyway. But they try to discard anything before a certain year. But all that is saying that common law is gone. But if common law is gone, then why are they taking an oath to obey and uphold it? And since they took that oath to obey and uphold it, we're going to hold them to it. We don't care what they think. We don't care what they were taught in school. We're going to hold them to their oath.
Yeah, well, what happened in my case is, you know, he said, well, what do you mean common law? And I said, well, you know, anyway, he ended up putting me over into the circuit court for a jury trial. And I said, well, you know, if I'm going to have a jury trial, I want a jury by my peers, a trial by jury of my peers. And he said, well, then that's it. I'm going to send you over to the circuit court. And I said, no, I don't consent to that. I said, there's no jurisdiction to move forward from this point. So anyway, they send me over across the street to the circuit court with a prayer for a jury trial, which I didn't sign and I didn't consent to. And they schedule it for an October 10th date. But what I did was I filed a writ of error, and I said, no, you know, first of all, you know, there was an error on the jury, prayer for a jury trial, and that you don't have jurisdiction, you don't have subject matter jurisdiction, and therefore vacate the trial date on October 10th, and it ordered the clerk to vacate the trial date on October 10th and dismiss the charges. So I don't know what they're going to do with that, but they demurred on the complaint that I sent. They never even acknowledged it, even though the judge read it all in court.
You know, well, you need to move it federal now, and because remember, well, you're in constructive custody. Plus, they arrested you, they took you into custody, they detained you. All of this is kidnapping, and those are the charges you need to pursue now.
Yeah.
At this point, you need to make a federal case out of this because it
well,
is.
Well, I filed a federal claim, and you know they dismissed it without prejudice, saying that because there's a prayer for a jury trial on the record, you know, in the case, that the federal court can't do anything until it's adjudicated in the state court. So,
well, that's not true, because the state court doesn't have jurisdiction. You probably didn't write the paper right then, because you see, they don't have jurisdiction to make an, because you're going to file charges against them. You see, they're looking at the other side of the case, where they're given the case jurisdiction, because and they're talking about the jury trial was requested, so on and so forth. You see, that's what they're looking at. How did you write the paper? Did you make the point from your perspective? All of that was illegal. That was all.
Which paper, the writ of error?
No. Well, that and what did you? How did you move it into the federal court? Did you make the point that you are suing them? They have
yes.
no suit.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, what they said was that it was a civil claim for damages, and that they couldn't move.
The feds can't move
a criminal complaint by the state.
Well, no, that's not true. Again, their jurisdiction is anything under the Constitution. That's where their jurisdiction lies. Anything under this Constitution is their jurisdiction. And if you were violated under this Constitution with the Bill of Rights, which you were, you can name a number of them. I hope you named those rights that they violated you. And that's why they have to take the jurisdiction. They don't have a choice.
Oh, I filed a valid claim, but what the judge said was that it was premature and that it needs to be, adjudicated in the state first before they can move it to the federal court.
Well, no, I think I'd like to see the paper you filed.
In the federal court?
Yeah, how many pages is it?
It's probably 8 pages, double space.
I throw it on Skype. I'll try to take a look at it. I'm really, really super busy the next 2 days or so, so wait a couple of days. And maybe over the weekend throw it on. I'll see if I can read it. And I'll find out what the problem is. And
the last thing I want to do is get sucked into one of their...
Listen. Every judge, when you're trying to go after other people in their game, you know, every judge is going to try to get out from underneath it. They're going to look for
exactly some kind of
an out. And he saw something in there that gave him an out, and he feels comfortable with it. When I read your papers, I might be able to ascertain what that is. And if I can, I'll let you know. But look, when you write your papers next time, they got to be rock hard solid. you can't make the point of anything in the case that they did doing. Everything they did was a criminal act. That's what your position is. And they violated your unalienable rights coming out after you, you know, with ultimately by they first of all, they arrested you. They had no authority to arrest you. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I thought I did pretty well in that. I don't know. Stu read it. He thought it was spot on. But, you know, they said it's a civil, that my complaint is a civil issue against them.
Well, again, didn't you bring up 1842, both of them?
Yeah, it was all in there. Yeah.
It's criminal in there. Did they violate your unalienable? Did they incarcerate? Did they kidnap you?
Yes, put that in there.
Well, put that in there. That's a criminal case. What's he talking about? You see, you need to give him a writ of error.
Right now.
You need to give him a writ of error.
At the federal court.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you need to rescind his decision. You know, that's what you need to do.
Yeah. Well, I could read it now, but I'll get on with you another time and go over it. But... that's what they were saying, that it's that this is a civil matter and they can't do anything until this criminal. But see, I don't want to get sucked into their Nisi Prius, jury trial.
Look at
because
this. You see, look at. Did you quote Section 2, Article 3, Section 2? It says judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made. Okay? So, of which shall be made under their authority. So, look at this whole thing is their case. The state cannot rule on this. You cannot get any remedy in a state court, and that's your argument back to the federal court. How can you send me back to a state court that cannot give me remedy? They do not have the ability or the authority to make a ruling under this jurisdiction. Only the federal court can make a ruling under this jurisdiction. See, so and look at I made the mistake in the beginning for quite some time, you know, sticking in the courts and in the state courts and working my way through that, and I figure, okay, if all goes wrong, I can eventually move it into the federal courts. I was just wasting my time, is what I was doing, but I was learning too, so that was okay to some degree. But no, you got to immediately go to the proper jurisdiction right away. I don't like to waste time. I know Thornton teaches, you know, he likes to get two bites of that apple, but the first bite is irrelevant because you're not going to get anything worth anything. You're going to get the worm in the first bite is what you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, I could read it real quick here, but it's actually 14 pages. But
I don't want to go through that right now because I'd like to read it before I would read it online to make sure that, we got it hit by hit, point by point. Get it to me next week sometime. I'm just way, way too busy, you know. Maybe I can look at it over the weekend, but get it to me later.
Well, my thing is that, you know, I'm not going to their court, to their Nisi Prius jury trial court on October the 10th, especially. This is the same judge that's had all my other cases, and I'm going to give them a chance to respond to the writ of error. And then I'll file a motion for that judge to recuse. But and also I want to get it moved out of the county if I have to stay in the state court. But I have a valid.
Look, you can't stay in the state court. You can't get remedy there. Do you understand what I'm saying? Remedy is not possible in that court. They're saying they arrested you and they have jurisdiction. You're saying they kidnapped you and they have no jurisdiction.
Yeah.
You know, how can you win that a case in a state court? Number one. Number two, they're going to give you a Nisi Prius, jury. The judge is going to, first of all, I bet you dollars to donut, they don't give you 12 people. Okay, I bet you they give you six.
And then he's going to say, well, no, we're not going to exclude that person. They're in the jury.
And then he's going to direct the jury, especially at the end of the case. He's going to say, okay, now if you see that this A, B, and C, this was and according to them, those things were violated, and they'll be proven.
Well, here's what I had in my causes of action: trespass on the case, the plaintiff's unalienable rights were trespassed upon by the defendants when they unlawfully and intentionally intruded upon the plaintiff with intent of deadly force under the color of law, thereby causing the following irreparable injuries: kidnapping, false arrest, and false imprisonment under the color of law in violation of 18 U.S.C.
Okay,
241.
But did you get in here the point that they have to listen to it under Article 3, Section 2? And
well,
this is their jurisdiction. See,
okay,
did you get in here the actual, amendment?
Well, when I went into trial on the 15th, that's what I said. I'm entitled to an Article 3, Section 2 trial case.
Yeah, you just said words, but it doesn't mean anything. No. You got to get it. Look, what counts on court really is what's on paper. That's what counts. Because whatever you say, anything you say in a court record, they're gonna clean up later anyway. Okay? And they may even clean up right away. But they're not going to hold to that. It doesn't mean anything. You got to get it on paper. You got to stick it in his ear. The other thing you got to do, look at you have to tell your story in an affidavit. That's got to be totally
separated.
That's
in there. It's all in affidavit
form. 13 pages might be too long, depending on what's in those pages. Okay, and it sounds like you might have constructed it in a way that lawyers constructed. You know, you were going for cause of action type principles in there. And I wouldn't go to, trespass on the case. I wouldn't even go into that. I would go straight to the gusto, the fact that that you can no longer get remedy in a state court because the jurisdiction belongs to the federal court. That's number one. Okay, and then I'd lay out why. And I would talk about what constitutional amendments were violated. Okay, so whatever was in the Bill of Rights, whatever it is, due process, and so on and so forth. I'd also make mention of the fact that there was a conspiracy, and that they conspired together to hijack you into a foreign court. The police officer, the judge, and the prosecutor worked together in that. It's a three-way conspiracy. And, these are the things I would get into, and then I'd tie them into the U.S. 42 and 18. But again, I do put a lot of stuff. I usually have a lot of pages, but if you notice, most of my pages will be a lot of footnotes, and it'll be a lot of Supreme Court rulings or their laws.
Yeah.
I don't get too much into the story in the paper because that gets too confusing. I refer to the affidavit, and I just give the synopsis of the affidavit as minimum as possible. Because that's where they get lost. That's where they can find they can get lost in and start to kind of throw you out. But yeah, you have to reject that decision. But you may have to write your paper a little more clear. And so that's something you could do.
It's pretty clear. Like I said, I don't know if in the jurisdiction. The last time I filed something in the federal court, they said it was too long because it was like 60 pages. So I tried to keep it all.
Definitely.
But I
look
said
it,
this action
it,
is brought under
it,
a 42 U.S.
Less
yeah.
is more. Less is always more. Less is always more. If you're trying to educate the court, okay, then you'll have more in there. But I've learned now to do that in memorandums. Okay, that's why when you heard that traffic thing, there's a lot I have to say there, but you go to the memorandum, okay, the law of the case. Okay, that's 26 pages. But you're going to have synopsis out of that. That's all you need. And the synopsis is already in there. They're not a court of record. They have no jurisdiction, and that judge has no ability to rule because it's not common law. All of that is proven in the law of the case or a memorandum that you add to it. You see, make use of memorandums. You got your law of the case. You got your memorandums.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the state court, I definitely filed all the memorandums. But
conclusions. You only do the conclusions in your action, and you refer to the memorandum for the full proof of the conclusion. Okay? So it makes it very simple. Okay? A judge can read that, or anybody could read that, and they may not even go read the memorandum if they agree with the conclusion. Okay, and if they don't agree with the conclusion, then they're going to have to go read the memorandum to see why it is that you claim that conclusion, and then they got to make whenever a judge makes a decision and he writes a paper, your right's been violated because he doesn't have the authority to do that. You're not in a court
of
record?
Well, I know if I stay in this county court, they're going to throw me in jail. They'll Trump, you know, they had no right being here. I mean, it's all trumped up BS charges to begin with, but they're out to get me because I'm suing this judge in this other case.
Right. Talk to me next week about it. Get a copy to me next week and we'll talk about it. We'll try to talk about it on here online, but I'd like to get your case and see if I can't read it before then, and then we'll talk about it on Thursday because this will be good for other people to hear.
Okay, and then I'll when I drop my claim on your Skype, I'll put what the judge is what the judge wrote for the federal judge.
Yeah, you got about, how many pages did he write?
It's like one or two pages.
Okay, yeah, give me a copy of that too. And don't do it until, matter of fact, don't do it until maybe Sunday or something, you know, because I'm just too busy.
Okay.
And I'm not paying attention right now to Skype or anything. I'm so overloaded.
I can only imagine. I know my cases keep me busy. So,
can I interrupt
right.
for a second?
You hungry?
Sure, go right ahead.
Dan, could you or Gerard please recite what you... the track that you gave us to get on the National Liberty website to get to what you read about traffic and so forth in the file on demand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And bear in mind, I'm going to update that traffic. I got a much better paper. I'm pretty sure I much better paper, and those errors are corrected there. But, yeah, in order to get there, you highlight essays and lectures. Just highlight it. Put your cursor on it, and you get the drop-downs. You come over to Court Access Course, highlight that, and then you'll see court case examples. Now, I'm going to try to find time between now and next Thursday to update some of those papers out there, definitely the traffic one, but I might update others or maybe put some others up there.
Right. After Court Access Court was what?
Yeah, highlight Court Access Course, and then you'll see court case examples.
Thank you.
Okay. You see
please
that?
Court that case again. Examples?
Do you see court case examples?
I'm not on the computer right now, but court.
Oh, okay.
Court,
just make sure you're signed in because some of this stuff won't be seen unless you're signed in. So if you don't see jurist on the far right side of the blue bar, if you don't see the jurist tab, then you're not logged in.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Someone else wanted to pipe in there?
Yeah, John.
Yes.
This is Vivian. I wonder if I'm asking the same question.
You're breaking up. Who is this?
Vivian.
Vivian, okay.
I wonder if I'm asking the same question as the gentleman before me. But where can I find the paper you just read about jurisdiction? And
that's the same thing. Go to Essays and Lectures, just highlight the tab, Essays and Lectures, and then you come down and you highlight the tab, Court Access Course, and then another pop-up comes up, and then you go over to Court Case Examples, and you click on that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Alrighty.
Hi, John.
Yes.
Hi, John. This is Sheila calling from California. How are you?
How you doing, Sheila?
Good. I got one quick question for. I'm asking for somebody else. I've got a guy who wants to be a county administrator, and he has been in the United States. He's up in a county up here in Northern California, and he's been in the United States for 34 years, but he's never taken the oath to be a U.S. citizen.
He's taken an oath to be a U.S. citizen?
He has not. He's still a French. He's not an American citizen by birth.
Right. He's got to become, there is a process for that. They may use the wrong language, but really they don't. You know, look at, even though they're saying you're a U.S. citizen, that's okay to be a U.S. citizen. Our founding fathers thought of ourselves as U.S. citizens.
I wouldn't worry
too much about it.
He's only concerned because he wants to be a coordinator for National Liberty Alliance. If there's an issue there, I'm sorry, I didn't.
Oh, yeah, for a coordinator, sure, he could be that. And,
okay, good. I just wanted to make
sure. You know, he can't be. Let me think about this. To become an administrator,
He just wants to be an organizer.
Becoming an administrator, I think you're going to have to be really a citizen, you know, or one of the people, shall I say, that is a citizen of the nation, of the country. Being a citizen of the United States of America is a very unique thing. Because if you go into the preamble of the Constitution, when it talks about ultimately of a more better union, okay, it's really talking about the union of the people, not the states, because that's a more perfect union. And that's where, you know, I just recently kind of worked that out, and we talked a little bit about that last week, and then I kind of pulled together I was listening to the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers around 30 or something, and they were talking about that particular clause. And he was making the point that this union that's being made that's more perfect is the people, not the states. You see, the Constitution was originally set up to bring the union among the states, and indeed it does do that. But the most important thing is a more perfect union than that is the union of the people. That gave us a very special ability to be any state we want at any time, and we can move about as much as we want. We can be a Texan tomorrow, and the following week we could be a New Jerseyan. We could be anything we want, anywhere we want, at any time. And that's the more perfect union they're talking about. And so with that in mind, when you become a United States citizen, the reality of that, forget the fiction, because the fiction plays games with everything. They've boxed us in everywhere, and they frustrated us everywhere. To hell with them. Look, the real point of that whole thing of becoming a United States citizen is the fact that you're now in this, here in the United States, and you can take any state you want, and you can go live in it and be that.
Right.
Because remember, each state is country.
So thank you for that. And so it's okay for him to be an organizer, because we really
absolutely
need motivated
organizers. Absolutely.
Okay, great. And then the other question that I have, we spoke briefly about it earlier this week. I don't know if you want to get into it tonight, but we have a case where a sheriff shot somebody. The district attorney elected not to have it brought to trial. And then they also denied a grand jury hearing on it. And now there's a movement to bring it in front of the Board of Supervisors, and there's a letter that was drafted by the existing prosecuting attorney for the family of the victim, and he's quoting common law in it, and he did his own research. I've been trying to get him involved with this because I think he'd be a great asset to us. And so he's drafted this, and he quotes that we have the right for a common law grand jury in this paper, and so there's a hearing, I guess, with the Board of Supervisors next week, in which I'm fully expecting them to deny those rights again. And then I'm wondering if this might be a great opening for us to, move forward.
Well, from the perspective of preventing, now who was shot?
A young boy.
Was he killed?
Yes.
And his parents are involved in this battle now, or who?
Yes, and then there's also been there's been 40 deaths by police in our county.
Okay, if people want to do an affidavit on that, and that makes it even bigger when there's 40 deaths and you can get other people involved in those deaths, and you can show a pattern, and even if you don't have a pattern, just as one case is strong enough, but it'd be even stronger if you can show a pattern of people being killed and wanting the grand jury to look at this, and they refuse to allow the grand jury. Who are these people that think that they can reject the grand jury from looking at this? The judge doesn't have that authority.
Right. Well, there's let me just explain a little bit more. There's been 40
So this is
deaths.
A very powerful case. We would love to see the affidavits for that, and we probably would be able to use that to their advantage and to our advantage.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll keep working on it then. Thank you.
But also try to look deeper into it if you can. Maybe someone's done some research, and because someone obviously wrote a story or did something on the fact that there's a statistic that says there are 40 other cases or something like that similar to this.
Yeah, no, there's 40 other cases, and none of them went to trial. Zero.
None of them went to the grand jury. That's the point. You see, that's you need an someone to be able to give you an affidavit who did that research, or people from those cases to give you an affidavit. That would strengthen it. Okay? That would be huge for us, huge. So, and when you do that, if you can get that research together, and even if it's just this family that does it, and if you can get some kind of a statistic from somewhere that you can, that seems to be some kind of credible statistic, then you can add that to it, and then we can take that affidavit or a couple of affidavits, and we can run with that and help out in one or whatever we can. Again, because it's a grand jury issue or a trial issue, you know, a jury issue, because it's a fraud on the whole system, because it's puppet, because it's controlled by the wolves, this is a perfect case for us to raise up.
Okay, good. I'll keep working on it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Alrighty.
This is Greg.
Hey, John.
Oh. Yeah.
If you go to Breaking News and then you go down to RICO, you got a thing there asking for affidavits. Those are going to be filed in the New York federal court. Do you want affidavits from other states?
Well, let me go down and see what we have. Yeah, we are looking for particularly affidavits that have to do with juries. We did look to do something collective. We're collecting affidavits for just the fact of how these courts are treating people, and no one is getting any justice anywhere. So those affidavits we're collecting. When we get enough of them, we're gonna file something with that, because again, it makes our case.
Do we send the original or a copy?
Always make two originals. Send us an original. You keep an original. Make two copies when you do it, and sign two copies in front of a notary, and then send us an original. You keep an original.
Okay, so we need to get more than one notarized.
No, you could do the same notary. They can just notarize two papers that are the same thing. One you keep and one you send to us.
Okay.
All right, anything else on that?
I don't guess so.
Okay. All right, anybody else out there?
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Can you hear me?
Yep. Yeah.
Hey, listen, it's Greg Katsurian down here in New Orleans.
Okay.
I wanted to, have you given any thought to Louisiana, out of 50 states, is the only state that operates in civil law?
Operates in what?
Civil law. Which means that no lawyer from any of the other 49 states can practice law here, and no Louisiana lawyer can practice in any of the other states. And so I'm wondering, has anybody...
Hold on a minute. There's way too much noise in the background. I'm going to mute everyone, and then you can... Okay, hit star 6 and unmute yourself, and go ahead, say it again now.
Muted. Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, so that's what I was... Since Louisiana is civil law, and I haven't been even Rod, I haven't been anybody to answer this question, and nobody knows how to answer it, and that's why I figure if anybody would, you would, but we need to look at it. Louisiana is the only state that's civil law. That means that that a lawyer from Louisiana can't practice in any other state, and a lawyer from any other state can't practice in Louisiana. And I think because we use Federal Reserve notes and they're under the Constitution, I think I'm kind of with you and like, blah, blah, doesn't matter. But how would we, you know what I mean? I know we're going to run into this. And I'm trying to figure out, I'm not sure, I have absolutely no idea how.
Well, look, here's the facts, okay? They've separated civil law from criminal law. That can't be done under common law. It's just law, period. Everything falls under law. And if you're arguing a contract, you go to a court of record. If you're arguing, if there's a case that's a criminal act going on, you know, that took place, that's going to be argued in the court, goes to the same court. It's a court of law. There's only two jurisdictions, and that is a court of law and a court of equity. Now, a court of equity still runs under common law, okay? Mm-hmm. The only difference is that you're willing to go into this. It's either dealing with commercial things, which they're going to have to deal with one jurist, but there's an appeal system, and that one jurist is that one judge. And, of course, if we got honor and honor back into the courts, then that judge is really going to rule the right way, because once we find him in dishonor, we're going to can him. So he's going to rule the right way. And so he's going to obey the law. That's the key. Now, the other thing is that if you have a contract case, and you could take it, as long as it's over $20, you could take it into the court of law. If it's under $20, then it goes into the equity automatically. And $20 isn't very much these days, but, you know, when this was written, $20 was a pretty decent amount of money. But in any event, you can have a contract dispute, and it could be cut and dry. You could know it's cut and dry, and you can pull it into the equity side. And if your argument is with a corporation, no problem getting into the equity side. If your argument is with another people, then you both have to agree, and then you can go into the equity. The benefit of an equity court is, as long as it's an honest court of record court with one jurist, you know, you got a guy that's not looking to cook the books. He's not looking to fix the game. He's there to make the decision and to make it right. Well, as long as you can feel confident with that, and you can take a contract case into that court, because you can get it done a lot quicker. And goodness, the judge may be able to hear it in one day, and the day you bring it in, say, hey, this is my ruling, and give it, and it's done. And they should be able to. Look at all these a lot of these contract disputes that may go on for years. It's all about making money for the lawyers. There's no reason for that. Look at the contract. It's clear what the agreements are. I mean, you know, unless it's something really that's so obscure that it's hard to figure out, that it's going to take some time, but rarely that is the case.
Well, what they're doing is, if you're under the clean hands doctrine, not supposed to be able to go into equity unless they've exhausted administrative due process.
No, nobody's got to go into administrative due process of anything. You can if you want. You can go into that. You have to agree to it. You don't agree, you don't have to go. That's under common law.
Well,
you don't have to do anything you don't want to.
I've been studying this stuff for about, 8 years, and I'll tell you, I don't know if you can give me a summary, but I'm fuzzy on what exactly equity is.
You're going to have to speak up. I can barely hear you.
I'm sorry.
Get closer to your mic.
Yeah, can you explain in layman terms exactly what equity is?
Well, look at equity ultimately is generally dealing with commercial situations. That's really what equity is all about. And so if you, let's say I'm a general contractor, which I was, and you're a homeowner, and you hired me to do a job, and we make a contract, and we have a problem, and we got to go to court. It's a contract disagreement. We can agree to go into equity court, okay? Because equity court could be a lot quicker than going into a court of law. Now, equity court is still under the Constitution. It's still under the law of the land. It's got to be obedient. So that one single judge, who is now the one single jurist in that courtroom, he now has to make a ruling on your case, okay?
So the equity is the one judge?
Equity gives you one judge.
Okay. Now it's making sense.
Now when you go, to the appeal, yeah, go ahead.
It's appealable.
Yeah, if you go to an appeal, go ahead, Gerard.
I don't want to get you off the subject when you're done. I wanted to talk about Louisiana and why it's different than all the other states, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right, okay, so good. You can make an appeal, okay, and that goes to, I believe, a three-panel judge. And then there's another appeal above that. I don't know how many panel. How many? Do you know how many is on that panel, Gerard? We may be just talking New York, by the way, so each state could be different. But there's a panel of judges. There's the appellate court and the court of appeals. So there's two courts that
I
you can go on.
I think there's three. In Louisiana, I believe the court of appeals is three.
Yeah, same here.
Okay. All right, so that's what you got. And so you go into three jurists, and the next step up is more jurists, maybe five or six, I don't know, but whatever it is. But those are all judges. Those are people that are judges. They have the title judge. Now, look it. If we brought common law back into the game, we get it back into the courts, and all the judges, we bring them under the control of that. Now there's no more of this dirty game that they're playing with all these corporations, because that's what's going on in the courts. And so all that's gone. Because they can't get away with it no more because we're watching. Now they're going to make real good decisions because that's what they're supposed to be doing. It doesn't. Why would they make a bad decision unless they're getting paid off? And we'll find that out eventually. But they'd have to be paid off to make a bad decision. But look at if they break the rule, if they break the law, the rule of law, which is the law of the land, it's going to be obvious to see. And the appellate court will see it very quickly. And they're gonna scratch their head and wonder, why did you make that decision? You know the right. You know, only if you fixed the case here, you took a dive. You know what went on here?
They're all in bed together.
Right now they're protecting each other, but later on we get it back into courts of record. They won't be doing that no more.
Yeah. Another question I had, if based on a conversation we were having about a certain individual the other night.
Yeah, hold on a minute. Let's before we go into that, Gerard, did you want to comment on Louisiana?
Yeah,
before
Gerard,
he goes
go
in?
Ahead, please.
Well, like I said, I know just enough to make me dangerous, but I know that Louisiana had parishes, and when they came into the United States, and I think they were under the French, if I'm not mistaken, for many years, right, Louisiana? And they didn't give up that type of law that they had. They had, you know, those chancery courts and parishes. And every state was supposed to sign, you know, conform to the national constitution. But Louisiana kept that law and those parishes from way, way back in the 1600s. And they're different than every other state. It's a problem that has to be dealt with because I don't believe that that system conforms to the U.S. Constitution. Somehow
that's what
they let them,
I agree.
They let them get away with it. And it's never really been dealt with. That's not American law. That's something from France and England.
It's Napoleonic. It's Napoleonic.
Oh, it's Napoleonic. That's right. So they still have Napoleonic law there, John. And I don't know how they can do that and still be under the Constitution. It's kind of weird. But they
well,
made
because,
some kind of.
That's because all courts in the United States have been turned to chancery anyway, and chancery was pushed very hard in the states that came in later. And they kept it there. They kept it going there. But even some of the states that were in the beginning, the 13 colonies, some of those states still had some chancery courts going on. So chancery courts have been plaguing the United States since our conception.
Yeah, so Napoleonic was just another kind of a dictatorial court that they liked, and they left it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it conforms to corruption, and there, of course, Louisiana is famous for that. And I think it enables that. To go on much better because the judge has what they, my Googling, and I could be wrong, I found where the judge has a lot more discretion, whereas in common law, the case law where the Constitution says full faith and credit for, you know, for past laws and this, that, you know, that shall stand. So if it's ruled in Arizona, such and such, all the other judges are supposed to honor that. Not true in Louisiana.
Well, do they even use grand juries in Louisiana?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm a volunteer, and I like to call myself a du jour because I don't get paid for a district attorney. And they are, and I watch these guys. I do extraditions, And I watch these guys, and we have a really rare, we probably got the best district attorney in the country. And they do things by the book because I really watch them. And we have a grand jury on everything they do. Everything's, you know.
Well, that's your path to freedom right there. If you can exercise that grand jury properly and let it rule on the law as well as on the facts, you should be able to attain justice by that, you know.
Now, we've had a couple of guys that were, one guy murdered like 7 people. Everybody knew he did it, but they didn't prosecute him properly as per the Constitution, and Louisiana overturned his conviction. Of course, the feds just scooped him up and locked him up forever. You know what I mean? But if anybody does it, you know, by closer to the book, I don't think it's possible because of the way they've got the financials. You know, they've made putting a guy in prison profitable. That's what finances the dang economy. So, you know what I mean?
Grand jury have discretion to investigate government corruption? I mean, that's really one of the bigger parts of their job, is to hold the government's feet to the fire. And as far as what's going on financially, I mean, they should be doing regular investigations. We got some reports. Where was it? Out of Florida on the grand jury, you know, doing sort of an audit, like, you know what I mean, coming through and finding out that they weren't spending the money properly. And one of the things they also did was they said, oh, the conditions in the prison are really bad and stuff like that. And it was like they were the bosses coming in to critique the employees. It was kind of nice. Now, I don't know what they're doing in Louisiana, but, like, you know, basically, if you read U.S. versus Williams, he says that grand jury has complete discretion to investigate whatever it wants, as far as, you know, corruption in government goes.
Well, you've got parish to parish. So one parish, I mean, I can think of some parishes, they're so crooked that I don't even go in them, you know, because I work for a guy that will prosecute a dirty cop, okay? Other cops in other parishes know that. And so, you know what I'm saying? There's a club.
Right, right.
There's a club, man. And so we don't have, the group I'm with, we try to do what's right, and we don't play the club, you know. But there's more people in the club than there ain't in the club, you know. And,
right.
And that's a big problem, I think, across everything that we're trying to do. And that's why, you know, if you get into the private attorney general and bounty hunter, the bounty hunter side gives the grand jury the power of investigation. And I think that the people's grand jury has to have an investigative arm, because we're right back to saying, hey, we're reporting a crime, and we're asking the foxes to guard the hen house.
Exactly. That's right. And that's why when you investigate a crime like that, then it has to go to a private attorney general or somebody other than, you know, the seated prosecutor who is in league with the judge and everybody else that's stuffing money in their pocket.
Come on, guys.
So we're trying to, you know, so I'm in with a group of people that want to do the right thing, and they're waiting for change. But you got to admit that because of the way the money, the way the financing and everybody has to get that paycheck at the end of the week, a lot of these people are trapped. You know what I mean? They know the difference between right and wrong, but they're trapped because they got to get paid to eat.
That's why only the people can save America. The people can do this job. Yeah.
That's right. And I think that we got a good start here, and we just have to figure out how to, like I say, Louisiana is different, and I haven't run across anything here to where, you know, believe me, we got enough. We could file. I could bring you so many affidavits, you'd have to quit. You know what I mean? Nobody, they just let it go, you know. And I have first hand, during an election, the sheriff, I was a deputy sheriff for 18 years, and they trumped up charges against me because I wasn't voting for the right guy. Turns out both guys were criminals. So it really doesn't matter who you vote for. So I'm not registered to vote in Louisiana because I don't think there is anybody. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, they set it up that way. The criminal on the right, and the criminal on the left. Yeah.
You have to understand down here it's systemic. You know.
Up here we got the mafia operating. You know what I mean? Mafia. You know.
What do you think? What do you think happened? You guys know who Carlos Marcellus is, right?
Yeah, I've heard.
Okay, I can step outside my front door and look at his house. I live right down the street from where his mansion. And so I knew Carlos Marcellus, as a matter of fact, before he died. And so the deal is these guys, he was set up with Meyer Lansky, right, Bugsy Siegel, and these were the guys that started the gambling down here. And guess what they use? And you're going to love this. And I'm still alive this week, okay? But next week, I don't know, because I'm in Jefferson Parish. Jefferson Parish is where Marcella set up the gambling. And guess who his collection thugs were? The Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office.
Yeah, that and all the bayous you got. I guess they got it sewed up. They get rid of the bodies nobody ever
found. Plaquemine Parish. Everybody knows the story of Plaquemine Parish. And it's down there where Judge Perez was down there. And, you know, he used to, when they did the busing, he closed all the public schools and made them private. Well, I became good friends with his bodyguard, who turned out to be a freedom fighter. He died. He was 90 years old. And he let me tell you what, the sole purpose for that, I didn't realize this. Now, here, I had a commission for 17 years, and now I know why I had it, because I was their poster boy for stupid. Because these people weren't running for sheriff. They're running for drug dealer. Because 90% of the drugs in this country comes in that parish. And when they ran me out of there, oh, by the way, the sheriff that I was under, he went to jail for bribery. And I helped this guy that I thought was a friend of mine get elected. I got him elected, in fact, because we're the biggest employer in Louisiana down here. And he got in and ran me out, and that's because of my affiliation with the New Orleans district attorney that prosecutes cops, and I couldn't figure it out. Well, I told you about all the guys that were smuggling in the Jefferson Parish. They all went down to Plaquemine Parish because when Harry Lee died, the new sheriff ran all those guys out of here, out of Jefferson.
Okay.
So it's an interesting story, and I'm just saying, look, we got our citizens grand jury, but I'm really, common law doesn't exist in Louisiana.
Well, again, you know, look, at the people are going to fix that if the people of Louisiana want to fix that. As a matter of fact, Louisiana is one of the states that we don't have any real leadership in yet. Let me double check that to make that sure. I'm pretty sure that is the case. Hang on a second.
I'm probably the only guy that has a 50-50 chance.
Oh, wait a second. We do have some. What's your first name?
Gregory.
Okay. All right, we got a guy named Scott down in Louisiana has stepped up.
What parish is he in? I know you got somebody in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't tell off this list. I'd have to go look on another list. And this is the list of people that are coming to a leadership meeting. So, you know.
And I don't mind, like I said, I don't mind stepping up. And
do you want to take a point in your state?
I could. I'm probably the only one that could do it and survive.
Well, if you want to do that, send me your name. Just send me an email. But you got to commit. Once you commit that, you know, we're expecting people to follow through and get the job.
And I need to take, you know, your help. Like I said, I need to have a title because of my connections. You know what I mean? If I'm going to hit the ground here, I'm going to hit them hard. You know what I mean? And there
well, yeah, well, we're not going to do nothing until we get the move by the federal court to, you know, we're hoping
the
Supreme Court to give us those papers. We'll be walking with papers in our hand, and believe me, we'll be walking in across the nation together at the same time. This is the what we have to build and prepare for. So if you want to be part of that
I don't mind. I've got some typos in my when I wrote in my profile I tried to go in and edit it, but I couldn't. But and then I don't mind putting my phone number in there. I don't give it.
All right. Well, look, just send me if you want to be in this. We're having a meeting coming up very soon. Just send me an email, john@nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay.
Put in the subject matter. I commit. That's all you got to put there. And in the body of the email, just put your name, your state, your email and your phone number, and then you'll get an email from me very soon, with probably tomorrow morning or later this evening. I'll get an email out that will give you an invite to this meeting.
Look
at serious leadership in each state. Right now we only have one person in Louisiana. We'd like to get at least six, but one is a start.
I 100 miles away from here, I also have a residence in Mississippi.
Okay.
So I haven't, you know, I don't know if I'm limited to one state, but I can.
Well, if you can help the work out in both, that'd be good, you know, because, people need help. Mississippi, did you say Mississippi?
Yep.
Okay, Mississippi, we have no representation whatsoever. This meeting here that wants to jump in. Let me just read the states that we have no representation in.
Okay.
Delaware, Iowa, Mississippi, Rhode Island, South Carolina, and that's it. Those states
but we had a few people in Mississippi when I pulled up, and they were in the same county I was in.
They have not stepped up as a leadership role to take points and commit.
Well, they probably don't know how, you know.
Well, we are going to train. People don't need any experience. Of course, anybody that has experience in the courts, anybody that has experience with law enforcement, anybody that has experience with the process and procedure or common law, all those people are so valuable to be on point, okay? And so any of those people are very important if we can get them on point. But you don't have to have any experience
down here that I can get to come on board with us.
Well, what we're going to teach people is going to be something that no one knows anyway. You know, everyone is going to be starting off from the beginning, and it's not difficult. It just takes someone who gives the commitment and says, "I'm going to get this job done to get it going." That's all. And it needs to be. We need to get six people. We'd like to get at a minimum six people per state. And with that, we can do what has to be done when the time comes. And we don't have much time to train people, but we're going to be training.
So how did we get registered in all the counties then if we don't have leaderships? Somebody just filed papers? Is that what we did?
We don't have lead. Even in New York, we don't have leaders in every county. We went to the county. We took the votes, but that didn't mean that someone stepped up to be a leader. And we started towards the end. We started to do a lot of states collectively. We still made the notifications into the local newspapers and invited people. But that doesn't mean anybody's going to step up to take the authority. We have a lot of counties that don't have the authority. But look at. All we need is six people per state, and we'll get this job done. And we'll be prepared in such a way that to receive the influx of people, because there's going to be lots of people that's going to come into this process as soon as we move into the courts. They're just waiting to just fall in and come into place. There's no doubt about it, because we know we have tens of thousands of people that are following us. That's
how many
a fact.
States? How many? Oh, I know that. How many states do you have six people in now? Do you know?
Oh, well, we have, like, Pennsylvania, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 already. They'll pick up 6 in no time. Oregon's got 5, okay? New York, we got, just that's registered right now in New York, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. But I know we got more than that that's going to come in on board. Mississippi, we have nobody. Michigan, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, we got quite a few people in a lot of different states. We got 3 in Maryland. A lot
California.
Of people.
California. How about California?
Are ready to rock and roll, you know? California, we got a lot of people in California. Let's see, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 people from California. Florida, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 people have come on board in Florida. Georgia's got 3, Hawaii's got 2, and so on. So, look, there's only a few states that have 1. There's a few states that have 2. There's quite a few states that have 3, and some 4, 5, 6, 10, 12, as I've been reading them off, you know. So we're ready now. Look, we are primed to do what has to be done. We're about ready to get into the courts. Okay, that's about ready to happen. I feel strongly about that. And it could still take weeks. It could still take a month. But I think it's very, very close. And so now is the time to prepare, because if tomorrow we get into the courts, we're not ready. So now we
You're right.
We have the leaders across the nation that have stepped up, and they've made a commitment, and they're coming to the first meeting, which is coming very, very soon. And we're sending out emails right now of that first meeting. If you want to be in that first meeting and make the commitment, send me that. Now, let me repeat the states one more time. Anybody that's on the call now, particularly in these states that want to make the commitment and want to get on board to help us spearhead this across the nation collectively, all at the same time, to save this republic, here are the states we'll really need help in. Delaware, Iowa, Mississippi, Rhode Island, and South Carolina. Those are the states we need help seriously. Now, there are other states we can still need people. We got 3 people in Wyoming. We only got 1 person in Wisconsin, so Wisconsin needs help. West Virginia and Washington only has 1 apiece. I'm surprised with Washington, because I know we have a lot of powerful people up there. They need to respond to the call. We got 2 people in Virginia. We got 4 in Utah. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in Texas. We got Tennessee, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So we're building up very quickly. I think within a week we will have 6 in every state easily.
Yeah, sounds like it. Well, I'll send you that email, and I don't have a problem with that. Hey, I got the jury grand books yesterday, grand jury books, man. These are quite impressive. I've been handing them out. I'm probably going to have to order 500 of them.
Yeah, they're pretty books. They did a good job on them. They're very nice-looking books. So if you're going to send that email, anyone that's going to send that email to get into the game, again, you know, just put on the subject line, put I commit, and in the body of your email, put your name, your state, your email, and your phone number. Nothing else. I know exactly what all that means. I'm going to put you on a list. You're going to get an email tonight or tomorrow morning telling you when the meeting's at. And you got to be there at that meeting, and we're going to start.
So if I got an email from John Darash, that's where I want to send the email to, because you sent
send
me
it
one.
To John at nationallibertyalliance.org.
Oh no, this is Jurist List. Okay, John.
John J-O-H-N at nationallibertyalliance.org.
.org, not .com.
.org. We own both, but .org is basically what I use for email. Although for, you know, large emails, you know, send out. Okay, I saw Paul there from Hawaii. I think he wanted to say something. Paul? Is Paul out there from Hawaii? Yeah, how you doing? I think you wanted to say something. I know we talked a little bit, I believe, by email, no?
Good grief.
All right, I guess Paul's not responding. Anybody else out there want to talk?
Yeah, I do, John. Marge from El Dorado.
Hey, how you doing, Marge?
Hey, John, I've got a couple of things I want to talk to you about. The one thing I'd like to mention
is Sheila's question to you about Jean-Pierre, the French gentleman who lives in Placer County, and God knows we need representation in Placer County. And she discussed, gee whiz, is it necessary for him to have a citizenship to be an administrator? Well, yeah, I understand that technically the guy should be a citizen. But I just want to make this remark that I'm ashamed to tell you that many, many people that are foreign-born are better Americans than some of the Americans that live in our country and have been living here since birth. And, you know, when I think of our White House, for God's sakes, with about 15 Muslims walking around there with high-security clearances, and don't ask them where they were born, and many of them do not have citizenship. I'm sure they don't. I swear, mm-hmm. John. My idea is this. If this man is willing to do the 120 hours that it takes for anyone to become an administrator and passes all of the tests, you know, my thoughts went to people having common law marriages. If mm-hmm. they have babies together and have remained together for 10 years and have a perfect marriage, one could technically say without the certificate that they have a common law marriage and they're a legitimate family. Well, here's this guy that's been in our country 32 years. He's owned a business. He's most likely never been arrested or he wouldn't have asked about the administrative position. And I certainly think we should think twice about a fine American resident that's been paying taxes all these years and adhering to our laws, becoming the administrator of a common law grand jury after passing all the tests. So, number one, I think we ought to think twice about that one.
Well, let's go back to a couple of things here. First of all, I understand it wasn't that he wanted to be an administrator, that he wanted to actually be a coordinator or an organizer for National Liberty Alliance. That's fine. Now, as far as being an administrator, I think the person should be a citizen, but we're not going to ask, and they don't have to tell. Look at people are going to come in. They're people. They're flesh and blood. They're breathing. We're not going to ask people those kind of questions, and we're only concerned of only a few things, you know. If they're on probation at the time, obviously they can't do any of this until they get out of probation. Because they're still going through some kind of a problem they had. So that would be one thing I think we'd probably ask. We'd want to ask if they're working for the government or at any level. Nobody from working for the government can come in and be any of those positions. Of course, when they retire or if they quit and change their job, they can do those things, of course, then. Of course, if they're a bar attorney, they can't be on the process. Other than that, I can't think of any other questions we would ask people discard them from being on a jury. Now, being on a grand jury, there's no one to deny or accept. They're just chosen out of a pool, and that's it. They come up, that's it. They're in there. A trial jury ultimately is the same way. It's chosen out of a pool. And in common law, nobody can get rid of a jurist that's been chosen out of the pool unless someone objects for a reason that's obvious to prevent that person from sitting on that jury. Other than that, don't even think of giving them a questionnaire. Don't even think of trying to get rid of someone because they may not rule the way you want because you're going to take these, kind of guesses on them. But anyway, don't ask, don't tell. We wouldn't ask. Just go do what you got to do in life, and I don't know who this guy is. If he goes forward and does things, he does things.
Right, and if he's working with honor, justice, and mercy, and
he's got flesh and blood.
We have to look at each other with a jaundiced eye. Where are we coming from? Why are we taking this job? What are we doing? So I think if he passes all those litmus tests, there should not be a concern. And that was my comment number one, John.
Well, I agree because we never would have asked the question. If he didn't say anything, we wouldn't know. But the bottom line, if someone is not a citizen, they should become a citizen if they're going to live in this country and want to get involved in it. Of course, there may be other things that I don't know about. It's none of my business. But the bottom line is we wouldn't ask the question.
Well, his compatriots and the grand jury are certainly going to ask a lot of questions. We have to make sure that he was a cool guy before we begin. But indeed, he is, and God only knows. Look at what happened. Don't ask, don't tell with the president of the United States. So I think we need to reconsider.
Right. But again, you know, two rights don't make a wrong. I mean, two wrongs don't make a right.
No.
So I mean, just because they do it, don't mean we'll do it. But again, let's think about what a peer is. And let's think about, a job is a job. Let's think of what a peer is. A peer is a person, someone living 34 years in a particular area is one of your peers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And very interested and cares deeply for our organization. And I, quite frankly, sort of breathed a sigh of relief when I spoke with him, because I thought, wow, we have somebody very, very interested in doing what's right for our nation. And I was really humbled to speak with him. And I'm not easy to impress. So that's the reason why I wanted to bring this up again. Now, the second thing I wanted to bring up to you, John, is this business of our courts having to lawfully record our sessions. Now, let me tell you why this is so important.
Whoa, let's stop. No. When you say the courts record our sessions, you're talking about the grand jury sessions or trial jury sessions?
I'm talking about the everyday court sessions that about three telephone calls ago, you were speaking
every
with
court
them.
Every court should be recording the session.
All right. Okay, now we said should be. Let's make that real clear, because one of our fathers that I know of that just is being raked over the coal with no appropriate custody for his kids, it's just like a horror story. The judge says one thing during the hearing, and which is just an abomination, just a joke. He would be just tattooed to the wall if it were ever seen in writing. And then the court transcripts come out, and it's left out entirely. So it was my understanding when we talked that last time about recording these sessions that the main court has a recording and also the transcriptionist has a recording. So,
And you need to get it before you leave.
Well, we never knew that.
I'm telling you, I've said this many times. You need to get that recording before you leave. Your Honor, on and for the record, I'd like to have a copy of the master tape. And I don't mind waiting around a half hour if I have to get them to push their finger on the button. And here is my thumb drive. Who shall I give that to?
Most of them will deny that they exist.
No, I don't think they'll deny on record. You think they'll deny on record while you're trying to get a copy?
I think they have.
This guy has tried desperately, it's for the sake of the custody of his kids. He's tried desperately to get, a recording of specific sessions. And
visit the spy store online and get your own recordings.
Yeah, I think we can kiss that idea goodbye, because he asked the transcriptionist, and she said, huh? What? I never knew we recorded any of these things. And, that's not true, John, because the transcriptionist, let's say she makes an error, and she's got to go back to the real vocal stuff. There's always a background for the transcriptionist to find out what Uncle Harry said. If she screwed up and didn't get the tape right, she's got to have something to go back on. She doesn't walk on water. So there has to be some sort of recording. She can't
the judge knows there's one. If anyone else doesn't know, the judge does know. And that's why you do it on the record.
We got that ruling from Out Wester that they said if there's a discrepancy in the transcript, that the only remedy is the master tape. And it was a Supreme Court ruling that one of our people gave us. Mm-hmm. We wrote it down. That's what you're supposed to quote when you ask for the master tape.
There's a fellow on whose name is Bill right now that can shed some light on that if you want.
Right. He's spoke before, I remember. And as a matter of fact, I think I have information.
John?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is Bill in California.
regarding the master tapes. I'm working with Eugene Zurich in Chicago from Seventh Circuit Judge Posner. The okay. court case is the Smith versus U.S. District Court, which I provided to you and Gerald.
Yes, I have. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay, with regards to Margie, there is an individual that I know from Fresno, his name is Charles, that went up to Contra Costa County last week, and the judge uh-huh. on the record in open court says we're not going to tape. Is
oh,
that
yeah?
the one you're referring to? Marge, uh-huh. I will get Charles involved with you because it's something that I'm down above Bakersfield, and I'm working with somebody in Fresno. Charles lives in Fresno, and he
okay.
went up with a friend of mine to Contra Costa. He's trying to get his kids back.
No, that's exactly what I'm involved with here in a case, yes.
And Contra Costa, he's having a tremendous amount of problems with. And
okay.
I will, when we're done tonight, I will get Charles to give you a call because he and Ron was up there in Contra Costa, and the judge blew him away. He says, I am not going to tape this thing. We're not going to have a record. There is absolutely flatly no record allowed in here, and if anybody's taping, I'll kick them out type of thing.
Well, you know, how really would that help us if we know darn well there's no – that some judge says, hey, I'm not recording this, bucko, so the heck with you. Now, how does that help us?
Well with
first
the...
of all, you should be recording, and there's ways to do that, and I'm not going to discuss that over the air, but figure that out. And on top of that, anytime you go into a court, especially when there's fugazing that's going on, and that's every time,
right.
you need to do an affidavit on exactly what took place in that court. And if you have two witnesses doing the same thing, that's 3 years altogether, and they're sworn mm-hmm. affidavits, and affidavits are prima facie of any court case.
Okay.
But, John, how do you do that when you just got arrested and you're standing there the next morning in front of a judge who it's the weekend, and the judge is the one with the recorder.
But that's okay. You can do an affidavit of what took place in that court yourself. You could do that the next day, 2 days later. Just get a pencil and paper and write it down, your notes, and then form it into an affidavit eventually, and then sign, you know, get it. It's an affidavit. And then that becomes, you know, your court case. Look, they do not like to do affidavits. They'll do affirmations. And affirmation is always coming from a third party to begin with. They're not witnesses. They're nobodies. It's usually lawyers. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't give them subject matter jurisdiction. In order to have subject matter jurisdiction, there must be a sworn statement. There must be an affidavit. And and you better make yours so that you have a good case because they won't rebut it.
For instance, in this case, John, this gentleman is taking his custody case to the federal court. And, of course, he was misquoted so many times, you know, in the transcript as opposed to the actual oral argument. So if he makes affidavits, let's say, of all of the misnomers, you know, can't he take that on into federal court?
Listen,
and it'll be sort of the same thing as recording?
Yes, look it. Anybody
okay.
from this point forward, anybody that has a case going anywhere, every time you walk into that courtroom, when you leave that courtroom, you must do an affidavit of that day, what took place. Okay?
Wow.
Plus, you want
okay.
to respond on paper to what happened in that case, and you attach your affidavit to it, you get it into the record. And if you can get
okay.
two people to come in with you, you got three witnesses. And that's what you
okay.
want to do. All the time, every time. Let me give you an example. You know, I'm a construction manager, general contractor, and
mm-hmm.
I'm out of work for quite some time because I do this full time. But in any event, when I did construction management, particularly, I kept a log, and my log is good as an affidavit and a court record because it's kept daily, and all I have to do is swear to the fact that those things in that is true, and that makes it all good. That's it. Now they have to rebut everything in that log. Okay. Now, if you do that in court, Every time you go into court and you write down all the criminal activities that are going on, like they're pulling you into court and you don't belong there and they're forcing you to come because you're in a common law court, and they got this strange court going on, that proves it's a court other than common law, because they want to have their meetings so that they can make their money and also chisel away at your case little by little by little. They destroy your case as you go along every time you go into those courts.
Sure.
So you have to do your affidavit every single time for everything.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a great piece of information here.
Talking about Contra Costa County, California, corrupt judges.
Someone's talking. I can't hear them.
Yeah, he's very, very low, whoever
that is.
Is that
William?
That's Bill getting a hold of Charles, I think.
Oh, yeah, he's on the phone. Hey,
right, I'll put him on mute while he's going, but go ahead.
The other thing we found out here in New York is when you're in the family court, you know, if you make paperwork and take it to the next higher court, they get all squirrely because they don't want to lose the case. They lose control.
Right.
That way. And so,
if you want to get out of family court, start writing papers.
Right. Just throw them up there. They won't know what to do with them because nobody does it. You know, and they get very nervous. And even if you move it from the family court into the state court, I mean, you could always go to the federal afterwards. But you know, of course, you want to. A constitutional issue, which is not hard to get because they're violating every step of the way. You know what I mean?
That's a shoe-in.
But when we file papers in the family court, they about fell apart. They don't know how to answer them. They're so unprofessional. It's unbelievable. But they're used to doing backroom deals, and they get the women in there to coach them to say that the husbands threaten them so that they can get them on these programs where they got to pay $50 an hour to see their kids, you know?
Oh, my God, that was, then I guessed right, because the guy doesn't have a problem mentally or anything else, and I thought there was a kickback from these family programs that they make all these husbands pay for, and if the guy doesn't have the money to do it, he loses custody of his kids.
Yeah, it's a horrible system.
And vexatious, and so instead of going to a family court that was $200 a week that he couldn't afford, he got the best doggone family psychiatrist that the whole state recognizes, and that wonderful doctor stood in for the family court to say that this guy had a stellar character and had passed every test in the book. But you know what? They wouldn't allow that to be a compensation at all. They just wouldn't even look at it because they're criminals, all of them.
Yeah, well, that's why you got to sue the judge. You sue the judge immediately.
That is in the process right now. We're waiting for a date. But the whole thing is beyond even comprehension. I don't think the general public knows how badly fathers are being treated out there. That it's a purposeful move
That's what
it's all about.
Trafficking. They have child trafficking, and now we have father trafficking.
Absolutely, that's what we're doing. Here is an example where a disabled father could be a full-time a parent and babysitter while the ex-wife works. And the court would rather let her have an ex-heroin addict babysit the kids than the father who has not seen his children, I'm telling you, for 6 solid years, and they live 8 miles away from him. And he's a hands-on dad. Hands-on. He adores these children. He has a website dedicated to them, you know, the whole thing. He's not any deadbeat dad. He's a wonderful father. There are homosexual judges now in the family courts, and you know these judges don't have a clue as to how a father and a family, you know, how a father really feels about his children or anything about the family unit in general.
Either that or worse, they're there with a vengeance. Listen, I just want to say something else. The fact that somebody's on probation, look, their goal is to get all of us on probation. So I have a problem with saying that people on probation can't serve on a grand jury. I'll tell you what, these family courts, They're putting every male on probation that goes through there, no matter what. That's another money-making deal. So I think we need to look at why they're on probation. Most of it is a bullcrap charge, and they throw them on probation because that keeps their hooks in them, and they know that they're going to get them sooner or later. You know, they put stuff on, like if you're seen drinking a beer, they put all kinds of crap. It makes it impossible for you to not get violated. All right, go ahead. I'll yield the floor now.
I agree. Yeah,
there's only one solution to the family courts, and that's to shut them down. Look, you can't take a family and have a bunch of lawyers decide what needs to happen. It just doesn't work. And the judge himself is a lawyer, too. You got to get rid of all of them. You have to have decent people that take an oath, a vow to God, to do the right thing, and get in there, give them a little course on, well, first of all, a course on what we're doing, of course, but also a course on really just logic. It's obvious the child deserves at least that child deserves both mother and father. So the
Absolutely.
Only obvious the only obvious conclusion to the matter is that if these parents can't work it out, then they get 50-50. Okay. Now, if one takes 40 because they work more than the other, and the other is willing to take the 60%, that's between them. But the child deserves both parents.
Absolutely.
Hey, John.
Absolutely.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, Tanner from Oklahoma.
Hey, Tanner.
How are you doing, buddy?
Good.
I just wanted to say thanks, Gerard, because that's all I was going to say about the probation. I mean, I got the same thing. When I talk to people about my probation, that, you know, a lot of people's reaction is, how did you get a VPO? That's got to be difficult, because the idea that a VPO is some kind of ultimate protector of women and children that are beat by every horrible dad, it's a deadbeat, and that's a horrible phrase, and very much abused. And so on that note, I would just like to throw out there that it's been a couple of weeks for Mr. Thomas Fiddler, the head of the Father's Rights Movement in Alaska, to kind of look over his stuff, so I was going to touch base with him again. I just wanted to give you a heads up. Maybe I sent you a text with his number on it. I don't know if you saved it on your phone, but I was going to try to get him in touch with you so that you guys could kind of talk back and forth. So I just kind of wanted to refresh that with you and see if that was still something you wanted to do.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I don't recall. You sent me a text on my phone?
No, I sent John a text. We all three.
Well, yeah, I didn't know that. I very rarely get texts, so I'll have to look on my phone.
Well, I can send it to you again. I just don't want to send it, you know, with a pile
of
everything.
Well, if you send me a text that's in my phone, I'll know to look for it now. I just don't use texting, and so some people send me text and I don't realize it. Sometimes I hear the beep, and sometimes I just don't know. So
yeah, it's no big deal. I figure you get piles of stuff from anybody anyways. And the other thing on that note is I just went to my first domestic battery class that I have to pay for, and I'm fighting the drug tests that are unneeded, and I think I might get that just from being polite to people, and I'm really haven't been able to start on my paperwork. But they keep telling me that the attorney general and legislation is what's forced in Oklahoma, at least, you have to go to these battery classes and you have to do all this. I know it's a huge money-making wheel, and to kind of just fill that in for what the previous lady was talking about, Social Security Act Title 4D is where you're going to find the kickbacks. We don't really know the exact numbers because they're very vague in their percentages, but there is, it's jail, all food stamps and TANF funding, and all domestic battery classes and all the probation, all that is matched from federal funds from Social Security Act Title 4D. I do know that. I don't know. You just have to look at it and see what you think. But I was going to see what you thought about the Attorney General, and if that's kind of a sign that I've got a problem with the Attorney General around here doing those kind of things or what. I'm really kind of uneducated on that aspect.
On the Attorney General?
Well, I mean, he's the one that set into the mandatory classes that everyone has to take and pay all these fees and go through all. It's like drug court, but for fathers that have children and an angry mother, basically. And so I didn't know if that was a sign that I'm probably not going to get a lot of, you know, I don't really have anybody on board with what we're doing on that sort of deal.
Yeah, I don't know how to advise you on that. You know, look, at some point we have to change the whole system, and that's coming. But we have to win, and in order to win, the people have to stand up. People have to get on point, and we got to do the job. We're really pouncing on them right now. We got to keep it going, and we need the people to start working with us collectively across the nation. And we're getting ready to do that. So,
are you saying the attorney
John?
Yep. Hold on a minute, Gerard. Hold on a second, Gerard. What were you going to say? What were you saying?
I want to know. Are you saying that the attorney general is making a mandatory course that you have to take? Even if it's the wife who's violent or angry?
Yeah, there's one Tuesday night at 5:30 class for women, and then every night of the week for men. There's so many of them in there. But it's called domestic battery class. You got to pay per week. You have to pay for your assessment. You get random drug tests you got to pay for, and then you got to pay to graduate.
Wow.
And
wow.
52 weeks mandatory.
Where's the statute for this?
Oh, man.
Do they have a law for this?
Yeah, it's the legislation that they say it's legislation, and the attorney general is serious, and you cannot get any aid on the funding because that's part of your punishment. You have to pay for it out of pocket. So, like,
have you seen it? Have you seen the law? Are they just telling you that?
Honestly, I have such a big stack of paperwork from
everybody needs to fish for this stuff. You just can't take their word for it, folks. You just can't take their word for it. You got to have them prove it. Show it to you.
Yeah,
well,
I don't believe that.
I got sued right up in the federal court.
Yeah, I need to move it to federal court.
Look,
and
they
really
kidnapped your children.
Yeah, they have.
Okay. Did they convict you of battery, or were you just accused of battery? Were you convicted?
Well, remember, I had these temporary VPOs extended out for almost 2 years now. And one time they continued one that had a dead end. It had a date that it ended. The judge didn't say anything about continuing it. My lawyer advised me I wasn't on it. I tried to do the right thing and say, I'm willing to talk for our children in a text message. 10 months later, they put me in jail and gave me the 52-week battery class. And 5 years of probation.
For a text message.
That basically said, I'm willing to speak for our daughter's sake. She doesn't deserve to suffer because of us. So let me know. And that was it. They even read it.
They gave 52 weeks of a battery class, and you didn't go in front of a jury or a grand jury or anything, right?
No, in fact, my lawyers, now that I found you guys after this, but my lawyer was in there I had two lawyers by this point, for subpoena the other one, all that. But anyways, they were all standing in with the judge, you know, and I'd stand by their door and they'd kind of send him out to shoo me away, but they advised me to not do a jury trial and to do a judge jury trial. And anyways, so now I'm all wrapped up and I'm wrapped up in this, but this is the one where the judge added 10 days of county jail, and that's why I do, you know, I'm getting ready to go to jail tomorrow, so, you know, for my other weekend, you know, one of the weekends, so that's why I haven't, go ahead.
I said, you've been railroaded for sure.
Yeah, I'm tired, and I'm trying to file my paperwork, but I'm trying, you know, I try to listen to everything, tapes, make the calls and all that. I wish I had somebody over here that was doing paperwork, you know, that could help me out, but you know, I just wanted to mention, one, the probation, and I'm glad that you mentioned it, Gerard, before I could even say anything. I mean, everybody is wanting, they want everyone to be in probation, especially men. There's no head of the household, there's no father, there's no, especially anybody that has Christian values, that's out the window. You know, and I'm not saying I'm faultless in everything, but there's nothing that deserves, I have two other kids that I don't have these problems, but yet she still has the upper hand, and I can't see them unless she's okay with it. But we don't fight like this. The other one, you know, she just said, I'm scared. And 2 years later, I'm still going to, you know, I'm still suffering. Now I'm facing a year, you know, because I went to the wrong place to check in once, you know. But it's out of control, for real. And I just didn't know about how this attorney general stuff, because I heard there were some attorney generals doing some, had some better ideas about what we're doing. And I couldn't see that lining up with what they're telling me that this, they're so adamant about everyone going this. I know they're making so much money on it, you know.
Yep.
John, can I want to give some information.
Yeah, go ahead.
To these people. It's Rosanna from Ohio. The gentleman right now and the lady from California that was just on there about the tape and the recordings and all that. Here's one thing I know, and I'm going to stand by this. Nobody is utilizing public records requests the way they should be. And I bang them with this stuff. I bang them with this stuff. But you've got to make your public records in almost every state. If not, you've got your federal FOIA, okay, Freedom of Information Act. But in every state, they have their public records request laws. And, you know, that's staying out of common. They don't have anything to do with common law, but still in the courts, you can make a public records request. Everybody needs to start making these. They're simple, simple, simple. Just find your code in your state. Make your public records request. You would not believe what I have gotten through public records. As long as it's a public record that the people are supposed to have, make it. It's so easy. Now, they're going to sometimes want to fight you, but I'll tell you what. When they want to fight you, you do what I did. You file a writ of mandamus against the judge who won't give it to you. You go through the appellant court, you win. Then you go up to the Supreme Court, you win. And then you get the judge to pay your lawyer's fees if you have a lawyer. Because that's exactly what happened to me. It's the one thing I had work. It's the one thing. And you've seen it on the Ohio Forum site. I've got it posted there. But make your public records, whatever you're looking for that's supposed to be public records, those tape recordings and those hearings are public record. They're public record. So put in a public records request for the tape. And sometimes they want to use the court transcriber to the court reporter. Oh, no, we have to have her transcribe it out. But just force the issue. You know what I'm saying? And here's what else you do. When you make your public records request, not only do you quote the code in your state that gives you the rights to get this public record, ours is 149.43A, but then you also quote there will be another one. It'll tell you to ask them if they prohibit you from having that. Make sure you stipulate, if you can't give this to me, why you can't give. What's the prohibition that you can't give this to me for? Make sure you put that in there, too, so they have to give you a reason why they're not going to give it to you. But you have to be adamant about this sometimes, and sometimes you have to kind of fight them. But for the most part, when you give them a public records request, and if it's outlined by the law, they're pretty good. Most of them pretty, because they know that you can file against a writ on that and get it. They know you're going to get it by a writ, a mandamus. That's what I filed. So I'm just recommending to everybody across the country, get those public records requests in, and if it's a public record, then they have to give it to you. If you go to court and you're going into a hearing, make sure you put in a request that you want the thing tape recorded, okay, or a stenographer, you know, a court reporter there, whatever. But make sure you put in the request that you want that recorded before it happens. So that's on record. And then when you put in the public records request and they don't have it, oh, my gosh. Because you've already put in the request.
That's probably the one area where the federal government likes to flex its muscle on the lower courts because, you know, they're jealous of their power. So they probably don't have any problem in giving the people a public record that the lower court refuses to give. That's probably the one way that they bang them upside the head a little bit to keep, you know, to exercise their authority.
Yeah, it worked for me. I mean, I knew the record that the judge was refusing me with public records. There was no doubt in my mind about it. And the appellate court upheld me, and then they cried, and they wanted the appellate court to overturn their decision. They said, no, it's public records. Then they forced it up to the Ohio Supreme Court, and I'm saying, oh, no, no. And they said, no, it's a public record. Give it to her. Now you got to pay her lawyer's fee all the way up to us. So the judge, and I'm telling you, that's what started my problems. But it was mine to have, and we couldn't write. Listen, we can't write a findings and facts and conclusions of law and a brief on this unless we have this doctor's assessment to have it to write off of. And that's what he was holding back from us. I needed that to write the brief, you know, with the lawyer, and they were refusing it. So
he knows. He knew what you wanted for. That's why he was giving it to you.
Yeah, exactly. These people are the evil. I'm telling you, they have no blood in their veins. And so anyway, all I'm doing is I'm recommending if there's one thing that's out there for you to use, it costs nothing, is file your public records request. Think to yourself, Is it public records? Is it public records? That's what I'm going to file, is the public records one. Look into your codes. Re-go through your public records requests. Many of the states now even give classes. The officials, you know, are supposed to go and take classes. At least in our state they are. Classes on public records. Jump in there. Go on. And listen to what they've got to say about your public records. What is, what isn't, what you can have, what you can't. Now, don't always believe that, but, you know. So go to those classes. They're free. And because we'll always have to have public records, even when the common law grand juries get in and all this gets gone. We still have to have public records for the people. The people are entitled to those records if they're public, if they're their records. So we got to learn that too. We need to be. That's another thing we should be focused on learning and learning about to get ready for this.
Let me just make a note here,
real quick. Anybody who wants to get into the conversation, in case they don't know, some people may not realize this. All you have to do is hit *6 in order, or is it #6? Is it *6 or #6? I think it's #6.
*.
Yeah. *?
Uh-huh.
Okay, *6 to open your mic up. And then *6 to mute yourself while you're waiting. So. But,
hello.
Anyway,
hey, John.
Hello?
So I just want to share with that lady out in California to get up there and ask for that public records request and, you know, work on those. Hey,
right.
John, I want to share, if I can, I found this law dictionary at half-price bookstores. And I want to read something. You know, we're all having trouble with, well, we're not all having trouble, but, you know, really getting into the guts of common law versus equity and how this all came to be and blah, blah, blah. I think I shared this with Gerard. But just so people out there listening to this call can understand this, I found something in this book I'd like to read. It's not all that long, but I think it's so well-defining, I think it's worth to share with everybody.
Yeah, this was good. This was very good.
And it brings in the Judicature Acts of 1873 to 1875. Everybody needs to go out there and look this up. It's the Judicature Acts of 1873 to 1875. When I started web searching that, oh my gosh, all this stuff come up about common law versus equity, and I really got an eye-opener about that. But let me read this to you out of this law dictionary. It says, the division between the common law courts and the courts of equity continued until their jurisdictions were merged by the Judicature Acts, 1873 to 1875, giving all courts the power to apply both common law and equitable principles and remedies. One practical distinction remains from this historical division. While common law remedies are granted by the courts as of right when a claim is successful, equitable remedies are always at the discretion of the court, and the court will take into account the conduct of the claimant in deciding whether to grant equitable relief. So it's the court that gives you equity, it's common law rights. I mean, it's your right of the claim that gives you your common law, you know, win. That's the difference between your common law and your equity. So if the judge likes you, I guess that's what it means, deciding on whether to grant it to the claimant, I guess if he likes you, you'll get it. If he doesn't, you won't. Well, what's that got to do with anything?
Well, you know, in equity, there's still a law of the land he's got to be obedient to.
Well, all I'm saying is it defines it pretty well. Common law remedies are granted by the courts as of right when a claim is successful. It's right. The common law is right. That's what it's saying to me, anyway. Equitable remedies are always at the discretion of the court.
Well, that's true. Because at the look at that person is that judge is acting as the jurist, so he does get the discretion. But his discretion is controlled. Okay, his discretion has to be controlled by the law of the land. I mean, he can't.
Not when they're tyrants. Not when they're tyrants.
Well, that's a different story. They're breaking the law, and that's what's happening everywhere. No, I'm telling you, if it was working properly, you would have judges up there that would be ruling according to the law of the land that every judge is ever bound by. It's the law of the land.
It's appealable, whereas when it's a common law decision done by a common law jury, It's not appealable.
Exactly.
Unless they violated somebody's, unalienable rights, it's not appealable. But in an equity court, yeah, the judge has discretion. Like John said, he's the single jurist. But you can appeal it to it's a three panel judge up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And of course, you're still standing in front of three judges.
Right, but if you have an honest system going on, run by the people, watched by the people, they're going to be doing the right thing. Because we'll be
right. And we don't have. Yeah, but now we. That's what I'm saying, that we haven't had, and that to me broke up. Oh well, yeah, equity. They got judges just sitting up there like tyrants on the benches, so they're just making this stuff up, who they like and who they don't like. I mean, it was very obvious when I read this. You got, you know, common law is by right. It's by right. You know.
Well, just think about it. You got people coming in. They can't afford a lawyer in the first place. A lot of them are what they call pro se. They like to call them pro se. And they know, the judge knows, that this person, there's no way he's going to appeal it. He doesn't know how. He can't afford it. He doesn't have an attorney, maybe. Or he's got some kind of a baloney public defender who's going to tell him, don't have a jury. Let the judge decide, like that other poor guy. And he got a year, you know, instead of nothing. So they're used to this crap. And they've been operating like this for years. And really, they honestly don't believe that there's any consequences to their actions. And so right now, they're out of control.
Right.
Like Thornton says, there's nothing as frightening as ignorance in action, and they're very ignorant.
Yeah.
That's because it's admiralty law. It's the law of the sea. You're not people when you're in these courts.
Well, they're running an equity and admiralty. They're not running a common law law.
You're in the wrong, correct, and you're in
the
wrong court.
Well, I don't, you know,
they don't have
the
jurisdiction.
It is true. They got that flag flying up there that censures them to admiralty. But the bottom line, really, they're using the law of the sea, but ultimately they are running as chancery courts. That judge is the king.
Under
and
the crown,
that's what
correct.
It is. Yeah.
Hey, John?
Well, I'll yield.
Yeah.
Can you unmute?
Hello.
Can I
can you unmute everybody?
Huh?
Can you unmute everybody?
Anybody can unmute themselves.
Well, we're trying to get in on another line and it's muted.
What
are
you
on? 559-261.
559. Just hit *6. I mean, #6.
No, it's *6.
*6. Make up my mind.
I thought
we did already. We're hitting *6, and it's telling us that the moderator has us muted.
I don't know how that... Well, let's see. What's the number or what's the name on it?
William, 559-361.
559-361. See if you can find that, Gerard. I'm looking, too, but...
John, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who's that?
I'm Salvatore from Nassau. I just unmuted myself with *6, like you said.
Okay.
Hello,
well,
John.
Okay.
John, I need
yeah,
to
hang
ask
on one
you.
Second. Hang on
okay.
one second. You'll be. I'll let you go next. Okay. Go ahead. Finish off, Salvatore.
All right. I'm having a problem here in Nassau County. Actually, pretty much exactly what you were talking about on Monday night. In the letter that went out to the true bill that went out to the 115 different federal courts, I mean, is the exact situation that I'm going through. This judge will not adhere to any of the court procedure. She has committed treason on the record multiple times. Somehow she ends up ordering me a 7:30 exam because I kept challenging jurisdiction. And
right. Well, welcome to the American judicial system. That's the problem we all have.
Yeah.
That's the battle we're fighting. They're all tyrants. These people need to go to jail. I'll tell you what. I'm beginning
out of
to
control.
Get to the point. We're going to end up putting all these people in jail because I don't see any other way to get around this. These people just are evil. Evil and I have no other words for that.
Yeah, it's all monetized. It's all for profit. All for profit.
Yeah. Hey, I unmuted 559-361 is unmuted now.
All right, but let Salvatore finish. That's your name? Did I say that right? Salvatore?
Salvatore.
Yeah. Okay. So
is there a way I can bring her up on treason charges?
You're in a state court.
No, it's called Hempstead District Court. It's in Nassau County, Hempstead.
Yeah, federal or state?
It's state. It's only the only thing they hear in the building are misdemeanors, and they have a traffic court and a civil section.
Right. Well, if she's violating your unalienable rights, you got to make a case for the federal court. Do you know how to write that up?
No, actually, I don't really know much about it.
See, that's a difficult thing. I wish I had the time to maybe do some courses and helping people. I can only write cases and throw them up there, but people have got to learn. You know, we're so busy fighting the battle to get the courts back into order, and I just can't take my time away from that no more. I've taken way too much time away. I do try to cover what we can on law here on a Thursday, and then, of course, we have the 3 hours on a Monday, and then we have 3 hours on a Saturday. So we got 9 hours in there trying to help people. The best I can do is give you some framework cases, which I'll try to get more of them up onto the line. You know, we don't need all that many because the arguments are always the same. And it's all about jurisdiction, and it's all about them violating your rights and what makes a court case a federal court case. And you got to be very careful when you write your federal court case, because the federal judge is always going to be looking to throw it out. He doesn't want to deal with the problems down on the state level that are trying to be brought up onto the federal level. He just doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to go up against the judge. He doesn't want to go up against the other lawyers and so on. But so you have to really write your papers powerfully and on point, and be very, very clean about your papers. So you have to do this. We have a course out there called let me see. Hold on a minute. 620. You're unmuted, and we're bleeding through you. So anyway, you have to. You know, we have a court access course. Okay, if you don't know how to write papers, you can start there. But some of that stuff is lawyer stuff, but you need to understand that you can get some basic ideas how things work and what they're doing from their end. We don't do motions and all that stuff because that really has nothing to do with what we're doing. You need to see how that works, and you have to really make your argument against jurisdiction. The other thing you need to do is we have the common law area. You just click on, I think it's under essays, and then click on common law, and you want to do everything on there. I mean, we got videos there, we got audios there, and you want to do that numerous times through, because that's where you're going to learn common law and how things work. So you combine those two things, and then you take a look at the court case examples, and you combine
that. What exactly
that.
Is it called that you want me to write that I should write, that you recommend I write up?
All right, let me get on the site here. You go to essays and lectures, you highlight it, and you click on, you highlight the court access course. You click on that. So you download everything on that page. Then you go back into essays and lectures again. You come to, let's see, it should be common law in here somewhere. I'm looking for it. Common law lectures, okay. You click on that. You want to listen and watch everything on that page. And then you come back again to court access course and just highlight, and after that another drop-down box will come, and you click on court case examples. Okay? So those three places is where you want to intensify yourself. Now, that's a lot of work to get in there because there's a lot of – we got four lectures in there by Bill Thornton, okay, there's 7.5, 8-hour long lectures. We've got Carl Miller in there. I think he's got about 4 hours of stuff in there, or five. I think maybe 6 hours, I think, on Carl Miller. It's all video, and so it's video audio. You want to do them. And then we've got some other videotapes that really will be somewhat helpful. And we got some other audio tapes that are helpful also. But you want to go through particularly the Bill Thornton stuff numerous times. And you want to go through Carl Miller stuff numerous times. And then, of course, you need to know the process, you know, the anatomy of a court case. That's where the court case you know, the court access course will help. And then how to write the court cases that you're arguing, that's where the court case examples will help. So those are the three areas you want to master in order to go into a courtroom. Now, you also want to carry, you know, the jurist handbook, and you'll want a copy of the Constitution handbook, and you want to have that in your top pockets. You want to maybe highlight some of the stuff in there you're going to want to use for court. And like one of the ladies said tonight, bring a copy with you and say to the judge, hey, I'd like to give you one of these. I'd like to, you know, read a couple of things in this little handbook here, and have the judge turn to the pages. Of course, most judges won't do that, but, you know, hey, you
usually,
can try.
After the first time I challenge jurisdiction, every time I start citing any Supreme Court case laws or doing anything in my, you know, for my best interest, she immediately yells for the court officers to get me out of there and incarcerate me. She's incarcerating me and let me go about three or four times in the past year and a half that I've been demanding trial after she refused to dismiss the case multiple times.
You got to get out of that court.
The first bunch of times I was there, I tried to dismiss it, and
you need to sue her and all of the officers in that court, and every event that she you know, arrested you. You need to sue them all.
The other night you mentioned something named action. What did you call that? Something action. I can't remember. I was driving. I couldn't write it down.
Action at law.
Yeah, action at law. We got Sam.
You said I had to write up an action at law along with the supporting affidavit. That's what it was.
Right.
The action at law is sort of like what people call the complaint. We don't use complaints. Complaint is a language for equity courts. Okay.
Gotcha.
Action at law is for the law side of the court. So you're writing an action at law, and you want to make that a we're getting some feedback from someone talking in the background. Can you figure out who that is and mute them, Gerard? Yeah, I got it right there. I think I just got him. Okay. Where was I? I forgot where I was here, but
you just mentioned the difference between action.
Okay, yeah. So there's the two differences between that, but I forget where I was going to go with that. I lost my train of thought. But anyway, we do have some really good framework cases up there. I'm going to update them and pretty much.
Do you have
anything
in Contra Costa County? Can I ask you?
Do you have anything
in Contra Costa County? Do you have any cases in Contra Costa County, California? Seems to be a jurisdiction that's really out of control. There's a couple.
I know
litigants suing. You're in New York?
Yep.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But look at all the court cases are the same. It's the same problem.
It's the same. That's what I'm seeing. It's just like we were talking about. It's just monetized. It's purely monetized. It's for profit. One of the things I noticed, if you pull their licensing and their charter, they're licensed, every one of these courts, especially family law, are licensed as private enterprises. You know, they're licensed as a private business. I mean, even in some of the contracts.
I didn't realize that. I'm kind of surprised at that. I know that the courts are set up under a corporation. Okay, if you're going to go to a town court, it's a town corporation, and the court is attached to that. Same thing with a village or a city, and also with the state courts or the county courts. They're all under the corporation, and that's why they push you over to what they claim is the equity side of the court, which is really chancery. And it's pretty darn evil, and it's more evil than I ever could have imagined. And I'm beginning to wonder if there's even just one good judge out there.
It's hard, you know, I agree with you. And the issue is, so what they look at is they look at everything as a dollar sign. And if there's children involved, it's great to continue the conflict and shut out. What they're going to do is they're going to shut out the parent who they think is going to fight back the hardest. And the reason they want that is that generates fees for all kinds of different services they can order everybody into. So even if you try to walk away from the situation knowing that, screw it, I'm going to start another family, they won't let you. You know, they'll keep finding
a reason
to drag the
party in. Well, look, here's the secret to family court. go in there with paperwork right off the bat and fill that paper, put all their sins on paper, and let them know that they don't have the jurisdiction. And you challenge, you know, I don't challenge jurisdiction anymore, because that gets them to. When you challenge it, they'll take the opportunity and say, I'm deciding. Yeah, well, I'm deciding I got jurisdiction. Let's move on now. And that's
exactly.
A game
and
they play.
That just opens the door for them to restart, you know, really. You know, it's all a popularity game in that courtroom. That's all it is. It's a popularity game if you're going to play it. If you're going to play their game, then then you have to be popular. But at the same time, you have to record everything, document everything, write everything down. If you walk into a courtroom, you walk in with at least two witnesses. You know who? You know, and if they're really being crappy about it, like they are in my case, I hire private court reporters that are stipulated to by the other party, and the judge runs the court reporter out before the hearings start, and then kicks everybody out of the courtroom, and announces we're going to do everything off the record.
Like, you got to you got to get out of that court. You're in the family. You talk about the family court, right? They'll never let you out. No, you got to get out yourself. Look, you write your papers, you put all their sins on paper, you challenge everything, and then you move it over into the federal court. Okay? That's what you got to do.
Hey, John,
how did you do it? They kidnapped your children, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
There you go.
I'm disabled, so... Right. And well, I'm disabled as well, and they violated my disability rights. So I filed a DFEH complaint, and that's just started up. So we'll see if that goes anywhere. But I you know, in California, they have what's called the AOC, which is the they changed the name, but it's the corporate arm that oversees the courts, and it's where the buck stops for the courts. So I named the AOC and then the county proper. In the DFEH complaint. So hopefully the DFEH, with their own private investigation, will move it over into federal for me. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My son took my attention here. Could you just repeat that last 60 seconds or 40 seconds?
Yeah. Whenever if you're disabled and if you have any disability whatsoever, most of us are disabled by the family courts. Let's face it. If they've kidnapped your children and created anxiety, separation anxiety over the prolonged grief, those are, if they're going to, you know, one of the tricks of the family court is to sit there and try to have one of the parties going to counseling all the time, and especially the kids, get them in counseling too, get them paying for services. So what you do is, rather than fight that, grab onto it and use their tools against them. And one of the tools you can use against them is when they force prolonged separation between you and your children, that creates a long-term anxiety and long-term grief. So then you have what's called a separation anxiety and with grief syndrome. And as long as you can get a counselor to sign off on that, which a lot of them, if they're with the courts, don't want to, but you can start beating that drum that you are really disabled, because you are.
Right, but one of the problems is you're buying into the system, and that's a problem, and you're giving them jurisdiction when you buy into their system. See, I challenge it all the way through, and that's what I suggest to anyone. You got to challenge every step that they make. They don't have jurisdiction, and you got to look for the federal, for them to violate your unalienable rights, and they do that very quickly. They immediately do that. Mm. I mean, just the fact that they took your children. Look, your children deserve multi-millions of dollars for the damages they've done by separating you from them. Who are these people?
Yeah, they've separated
they
us
could do
for
that?
A little over 4 years.
Yeah,
under no grounds. I mean,
that's so destructive. That you can't replace those 4 years. That's 4 years lost that child lost with their father.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm there. I've got it documented to the point. I'm very good at documentation, very good at recording everything. I record them all. I don't care. Even when they kick out the court reporters, I still record the court, the point, because to me, they're committing a federal crime. And from what I understand, if you're trying to prevent yourself,
they're not even a real courtroom anyway. You can record anything you want. You know, but of course, when they know you're recording, they'll start looking for your recorder. So you use that really to do good to get yourself.
They assaulted my wife for trying to record.
Yeah, they will assault you if they catch you.
Oh, after they find out. But what you want to do is you record and you use that to write really accurate affidavits. And remember, later on, you keep a record of all those recordings. Later on, you might reveal them.
Exactly, especially in federal court. Because in this particular county, Contra Costa County, California, they're so juiced on themselves and their power, there's no court reporters at all, period, ever. The judges, they don't rule by law at all. They rule by exactly what they want. The kids are monetized, and they'll sit there and tell you to your face, "Oh, we do it. Well, this is what we do. Sorry, nobody can stop."
They don't care. They're evil.
And we're like, they are arrogant about it to the point of bragging.
Mm-hmm.
An open
call. John,
let me move on to someone else for a second because we're running late. And it was, go ahead. Yes.
Hello, yeah. John. I want to know how can I get to you with the themes for the blog. The blog
I'm
that
sorry.
I told you about, it's going to cost for the org, but that's not a problem. I just want to know what will get your attention where I can send these to you, the themes.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to just pick something.
Send it to me and Gerard. You got my address, right? My email address?
Right, but you don't get it. I don't
right.
think
well,
you
I haven't
get
been,
it.
But I'm getting. Hold on, I'm starting to get my email under control. I put an automatic responder on my email, which responds back to people. You know that I may or may not be able to read this, but I've been asking people to take me off email lists because I'm on so many email lists, and it's just killing me. But people have been taking me off of those things, so that's been helpful. People now, they're aware of the, you know, I tell them, look, if you're going to talk about A, B, and C, you know, come to these programs. That's why I'm here three hours a night, three times a week. So a lot of people now are respecting that, and they're coming to the program. So when I do get mail, I'm starting to be able to digest some of it. I'm starting to be able to answer some of it. But just copy Gerard at the same time. Between the two of us, we'll get it.
Okay, and what is Gerard?
Gerard, what's your email again? I think it's fixitforyou@live.com. Is that it, Gerard?
Is he there?
It's Gerard53.
Gerard53@live.com, right?
Live.com.
And okay. At live?
LIV.com, yep.
And also about Indigo. Anna had brought up, and also myself, with the donations, I think that's going to be a hindrance because people want PayPal. You know, they're saying that, you know, they're
this
not trusting.
About the case, you know.
So I just wanted to put that in real quick because we had it also in the meeting with Ali. And there was a lot of people's concerns that she had emailed and what have you. People are having concerns because of they're not sure that it's secure. So I just
I'm not sure. What's not secure?
For Indigo, when you're donating.
Right.
And most people want PayPal, you know, or something.
Right, yeah, I don't think, they may not be doing, but they do the credit cards. They have a secured service. I'm a little disappointed in that because I haven't looked in a while, but we have a couple hundred people that went out there, and we asked everybody. We got thousands of people that follow us, and we didn't get the response we were hoping because if we had 1,000 people went out there and they all put $5 or $10 in a one-time thing, that would have really pumped us up to the front page of Indigo, and we probably would meet a goal. But until you can get pumped up to the front page, we're not going to meet our goal. So we're not going to get anything. I was hoping to really, if we could have met our goal, we wouldn't be asking for money very, very often because we'd have plenty of money, you know. So, but it didn't happen. It didn't. You know, we did get some money, and we're going to get something out of it, and but it's not going to be what we're hoping for.
Well, you know, I guess people are on the sideline waiting to donate, and they're just concerned with the PayPal issue.
I don't think they have PayPal, do they?
That's what they were trying to find out. Is it some way that it could be connected or something? Because I guess is not the NLA people, but the people that you are emailing and you're shooting out to come to the site and donate. But when they get to the site and they see that there's no PayPal or, you know, something to that where their credit card is, you know, protected, that's why through the meeting we were having, we were saying that that's why the donation amount.
Yeah, but I can't make them have PayPal. It's whatever they
got.
Okay,
you can't do that. Okay, that's what we were trying to find out is.
Oh yeah, no, I have no control over that. They collect the monies, and then they put it into our they send it to our account at the end, and then they take their fee out of it first, and then they send us the rest. And so, yeah, we have no control. Then I get the opposite thing. I got some people who don't have PayPal and don't want to use PayPal, and they want to use credit cards. But what they don't realize is that you can still go through the PayPal, and you don't have to use PayPal. You know, you just use credit card to make your payments.
Okay. All right. Well, one more thing regarding when the other lady was speaking.
Yeah, we're going to have to make it quick because there's someone else that wants to pipe in.
Lady,
we've got a few minutes, but go ahead.
When the other lady was speaking regarding, you know, I guess questioning another juror or administrator or what as to what is, you know, their background and the whole thing. To me, it's just I hope we don't get into their system. You know, to where common law is so totally different, and this world has become cloned by their standards and what's right and what's not right. And a guy that's gone to jail numerous times in his life could be just well suited as a gentleman that's never been to jail or what have you. So I just wanted to pipe that in that, you know, I hope it stays on that level with the forefathers as to where, you know, even ignorant person can be a jurist. You know,
look. It's up to the people to make that happen. It's up to us getting the job done right. If we get the right people on point that really have to take on the responsibility to be honorable, to be merciful, and to be just, and to teach that and make sure that that's what drives us through for the first year, then we will be able to maintain that momentum at least for a good time period. But we have to keep reminding ourselves of those things. And that's up to the people. Look, I'll be honest with you. I'll come straight out to the thing. If people don't turn to the Lord, we're not going to win. We're going to lose because unless he blesses us, we ain't going to get anything. We can't win against these people. It's an impossibility. We need a miracle. We need God to intervene. We need him to do it. And liberty is a blessing. And if he blesses us with liberty, guess what? They can't keep us from it. They're going down.
Right. But God doesn't also judge us by their standards.
Of course not. Of course not. We're judged by God's standards.
And,
of course not.
You know, this, that, and the other. I mean, we're humans and we were put here.
I agree. I got to move on because there's only like 4 or 5 minutes left and there was someone else who wanted to talk. But I agree with you. Yeah. Look at God. We have to go to him under his terms, period. And I do bring that up often from time to time, and I'm hoping people are digesting this because if they don't, we're going to lose. And we're trying to really build, a just system, and a just system, you know, is synonymous with virtue. So, but let me. There was someone else who wanted to pipe in before we end
John,
the program.
John, this is Paul from Hawaii.
Good. How you doing, Paul? Right?
Yeah, that's good. That's good,
yeah.
Paul.
Go ahead.
That's good. That's great.
I'm trying to practice tolerance here tonight.
Okay.
Okay. So I sent you an article, a statement about Hawaii and the GMO and pesticide issues. A federal judge has ruled that there is no county home rule with regards to this issue and that it's up to the state. So I would like to know how to follow up and file perhaps an affidavit.
Okay. And repeat the issue again. Something to do with the pesticides?
It's the GMO issue.
Oh, The GMO issue.
Okay.
Well, that's a problem. We all. I got it. Look at you'll never win. Listen, you'll never win in court if you go up against those people. It's just never going to happen. We'll be wasting our time. That's something we're going to have to deal with together as a people once we're in. But until we get in, we can't deal with that. There's a lot of issues of that nature that we need to deal with, and I've got a lot of them in my mind, and I'm sure other people have some in their mind. And once we get into the courts and we get seated in the courts and we spend our first 30 days bringing common sense and justice back to America, it's going to take us about 30 days if we are well trained in the job, and that's what we're going to be doing starting in the next day or two.
Okay.
We're going to start training people on what needs to be done in every state. And so once we do this and we get in and we spend our first 30 days securing our liberty, securing the state, then we can start to move on to those kind of things, and we could do it together, and it can get done because we'll have courts of law back into the system.
John, with respect, this is Lydia Radin from Manhattan. I'm sorry that I'm coming late. I had to spend all day with my tenants association. When I worked for Senator Moynihan's office, we used to get calls like this all the time. Here's what you can, and they would always say, oh, pass a law, do this, go to court. Why don't you use the power of your pocketbook? Go down to your grocer and you say, I'm not going to buy these products. You will see how fast you will get results.
Okay.
Okay, so if you go down to your grocer and say, if you put these things on the shelf, I won't buy them. See your competition across the street? I'm going to go there and spend my money there. Your grocer wants you to buy products that you will buy. So if you try that, you will get fabulous results. You don't need the court to order anything. You have the power of the purse. Use it.
Well, the problem with the GMOs and the problem with the poisons in the food, hold on a minute, and the problem with all, we have a high fructose corn syrup, which is in everything. We have the GMOs, which is through the wheat, which is in everything. You can't have a hamburger or a sandwich or anything without
the
crap.
And in Manhattan, here in Manhattan and in Brooklyn, when we go to the grocers, because I read the labels, and you can't buy anything because of the high fructose corn syrup. We go to the grocers and we say, I'm not buying this, and then we go in.
Yeah, they have one little aisle in the store I go to, and you got to eat this frozen bread that's been sitting in there for 6 months, and it tastes like crap. Because it's not even bread, and that's the kind of stuff you have to eat. So we have a problem. We have a serious problem. Look it, I want the poison out of my food. That's what I want, and I want it out now. But there's nothing we could do about it until we get in power. Believe me, we're going to get it out of our food. And we're going to get it out of our water, and we're going to get it out of our air.
I have a quick question.
If anyone's in the Nassau County area...
We're coming to an end here, so... All right, go ahead. One person.
John, this is Paul from Hawaii.
Yes, go back to Paul.
And I have a discussion about this. This is with regards to the seed manufacturers growing seed in Hawaii and poisoning the entire state.
Why don't you try to give me a call? What's your time? What time is it where you're at right now?
6 hours. We have a six-hour difference.
Okay, so you're 6 hours earlier than us.
Yes.
So it's 6 o'clock in the evening right now for you.
That's correct.
Okay, so if you want to try calling me, let's see, at 3 o'clock, maybe on, Tuesday. Yeah, let's say Tuesday. That'll be about 9 o'clock my time, and you should be able to get me. I'm usually in front of my computer, and we can talk.
All right, John, I'll do that. Thank you. Aloha.
Thank you.
Yeah,
John,
have 10 seconds. Is that going to start tomorrow, or is that going to be at another time, another week?
What are you talking about?
The Friday night call for the committed people.
Whoever got that invitation got it, and it's tomorrow. So I didn't want to bring that up. So.
Right,
but,
okay.
John, if anyone's in the Nassau County area, September 11th, if they can come be a witness at 99 Main Street in Part 4, I'd be very grateful. I just wanted to put that out there.
Should connect. We got a lot of people down in Nassau. You should connect with some of the people down there. They're really pretty, astute people. They got a lot of knowledge in what we're doing. Connect with them. Look for the county leaders down there.
Thank you.
Right. What? That's down in. You're in Nassau.
Yeah, it's going to be at 99 Main Street,
yeah,
part
look,
four.
Look for people in Suffolk also, because between Nassau and Suffolk, we got a lot of people down there. Okay.
Definitely will. Yes.
Rick, are we
John,
about ready?
John, this is Mary in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Mary.
I spoke with Jan, and he told me to talk with you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to give me a call after this or in
no,
the morning?
Not tonight. You can try to get
not,
me.
Not sure
now,
if I'm...
This is who from where?
This is Mary from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I need to... You need to understand what's going on before I'm... Before you say whether or not I can commit to doing the county leader. I'm in Montgomery County.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And
well,
there,
if you can
also,
try, tell you what, give me a call. Try to give me a call tomorrow morning. Try me around 10 o'clock, and, you know, I'll take the chance of answering the phone. The problem is once I start answering the phones, I can't get off of them. You know?
I understand.
And,
I do
and
understand.
I try not to answer the phones during the day, so nobody else call me at 10 tomorrow morning, but you call me at 10, and we'll talk about what you want to talk about.
Okay, okay? Because there's also someone that wants to do a blog. And
okay,
so I'll talk with you about it in the morning.
Yeah, talk to me in
okay.
the morning.
Okay, terrific. Okay, thank you right. so much. I'm sorry I held you up.
All right, no problem.
Have
Rick,
a great
did you
night
fall
all.
Asleep over there? Okay, good night. Rick, did you fall asleep over there?
No, we're wide awake here.
Oh, okay, because we're going over, and I need to go to sleep.
Oh, it's okay, no problem. We're awake.
All right,
I
look at everybody. Good night, everybody.
I was muted.
It was
good
to meet with you again, and we'll see
great,
everybody
always,
on Saturday and
so
on Monday. Okay,
I'm sorry.
Rick.
Are you East Coast time?
I'm East Coast time, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thanks, I am too.
All right.
Bill, wake up. We're doing a round table.
Okay, you going to take us out with a song or something here?
Yeah, sure.
Commercials, yeah.
Wait. Wild Bill's going to...
What?
Do our Joe from Brooklyn thing. I'm gonna take you out with a song.
Okay, I'm gonna take you out of here with a song. Okay. All right.
All right, go ahead, Andy.
Okay.
All
right.
John, I got people
That's
in trouble
not a song.
Out here.
That's a commercial.
You're listening to the Shade and Wade Radio Network, where the truth is all around.
You meant something spiritual, you know.
We'll make you free.
That was good.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
I got people that are trying to get in on the recorded line on their cell phones, and they can't get the recording. There's something up with that.
What do you mean the recording? What recording?
They used to be able to call in on the recorded line and get the recording on their cell phones. They don't have computers, and they can't get the recorded calls no more.
Oh, yeah. We post them only up at we literally post them for download. So someone will have to download it for them, and then they can put them on MP3s. Yeah, we don't do the other way around. I'll see about trying to get it done the other way around, too, to get the phone number. Let me look into that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We're going to go round table. How about if we leave with this song? I know John would like this song.
Can you hear me or no?
Did you say there was a round table, Rick?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell them where to get to the round table. ShakeandWake.com. Go ahead.
Anybody can go to ShakeandWakeRadio.com. ShakeandWakeRadio.com. And go in this, you'll scroll down. You'll see the chat room. The play is on the right side. And the number we'll post in the chat if you want to call in. It's Annie, give them the number.
386-643-4024.
She'll type it in the chat right now. Or Rick will.
Okay, good night, everybody. This is Tammy Hollins, and I'm done for the night. I'll talk with you guys on Monday evening's call. Blessings, peace, and blessings.